Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines to call the scenes to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rise to our quite something able. We're off the bad in Camelot. We sing from the diaphragm alone.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I am Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would
realize... Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, the... So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Paul Harvey.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, watch that sound. Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. The time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, children, what's that sound?
Says the turtle and the Knights of the Round Table. Hello, everybody. I'm going to try something new today. Pretty sure you already know where you're listening in at. And if you ain't, I'm sure you'll figure it out eventually. There's a phrase that I put down here in the chat room. It says, protecting the problem solvers of the world. So, I don't want to get into a big old religious or ideology or even a political debate. I just want to talk about people out there that solve problems. People that actually get things done, so to speak. So anyway, I'm not going to mention where you're listening in, what radio show this is for this intro right here. I'm just going to get right on into it. There's a lot of things that we look out into the world. We see all kinds of problems. We see all kinds of things happening. And there are people out there who actually really want to resolve these issues. There's people that want to, basically get in there and fix it. There's a lot of people who don't. There's a lot of people because of whatever ideas that they got in their life about what they want the world to be, that they're going to do whatever it is that they want to do. They're going to take it in whichever direction they want. Some for just greed purposes, to make money, whatever. But there are people out there, there's a lot of brilliant minds that sit back and they look at the overall grand scheme of things and they see that at times it can be like really overwhelming. I'm one of those crazy people who actually believe that if we ever decided to, now this is a conscious decision with not just myself, because one man obviously can't save the world, we can't fix it all by ourselves. So, but there's still, in my mind, there's still always, until there is no other option, there's always a choice whether or not you want to do the right thing and you want to fix things and come together and just put all the egos aside and all the craziness just long enough to find the problems, fix them, and move on to the next one. Basically making the world better, one piece at a time. a lot of people, just about everybody who owns a home, that home may have several things wrong with it, and you just don't have all the resources necessary to resolve all these problems all in one go, which would be really nice if you could just had the finances and the funding to just to pay for a whole bunch of construction crews to come in there and basically just build you a new home, repair everything that is the problem of that home. And it's done. But not everybody has access to that type of resources. And all that squeaking you hear in the background, that's my friends making all kinds of racket. We'll get to them too. And so, what I'm trying to say here is there's a lot of people out there that really do want to fix this world. There's a lot of people that have a lot of good ideas. There's a lot of people that if they actually got together in what I would call the dream team that you always hear me talking about out there on the Mad Science Show and even on the Knights of the Round Table, I keep talking about this ever elusive dream team, these kind of like the cavalry, come rushing in to see a problem, fix the problem, and move on to the next one, go out and, saving the world one positive piece at a time. Those are the folks that I think that not only do they get overlooked, but they need in this kind of world some sort of protection. I'm looking at the education system today, and I'm seeing the people, the problem solvers of the world, being slowly phased out. If that makes any sense, what I'm trying to say there. The education system, in my view, is basically what a racket we got going on back here. Anyway, we'll get to that. It's all right. The education system, in my view, has kind of failed. Not saying that kids that go to school haven't learned a lot of things, but most of what they've learned is not to be one of those people that just kind of think outside the box for their own self. I think a combination of school and college and free thinking would be a fair balance to get these people to look outside of what the mainstream education system tries to tell people is or isn't possible. In my view, and from all the research that I've done throughout my entire lifetime, I have seen that we got every single answer to every single problem under the sun. You know, in the alternative energy community, in alternative medicines, and alternatives to just about everything that there is, we have solutions. And if these solutions were ever decided upon by the masses to, you know, enact these solutions, we could resolve things. You know, like if you just grab any subject under the sun, don't matter what it is. Let's take water filtration, for example, because that's one of the most important things. You got to have water to survive. We have technology to desalinate water. We have technology to filter water back down to its purity. We have natural methods by which we can actually filter water back down into natural purity. You actually even put the natural vitamins and irons or whatever else is the good stuff in the water back into the water. We understand that. We've had the scientific observation going on for so long, we understand all that. So that's not even an issue. You're standing by the ocean and you're dying of thirst, it means you didn't pay attention in science class, because there's a way to desalinate that and, you know, get other things in the process of doing that. But the problem solvers, as far as I'm concerned, is it appear to be a disappearing breed. There are a lot of people out there that work for big major corporations who do invent and get things done. But in the average Joe's life, you know, all the people that gather, you know, for protest about problems in the world, you would think that that type of manpower, if you could gather 100 people or even 1,000 people or more to hold up a sign that's saying the world is terrible and we gotta fight oppression and stuff, for the most part that I see is the chains of bondage are actually placed upon the individual themselves, because they don't take everything that they've learned throughout their entire life, and instead of holding that sign up, getting out there and picking up a tool and resolving that issue to begin with. 1,000 people building a house. There's a culture out there called the Amish community, and they actually took, and there's a video out there if you want to research it up, that they took 1,000 men and they put an entire house together in one day. Think about that. From start to finish, they raised that foundation, they raised everything, start to finish, in one day they completed an entire house with 1,000 Amish men. Imagine what 1,000 protesters could do if they were hollering about the water being dirty and they wanted to get that water cleaned up. And then they come and ask these problem solvers around the world that, hey, you know, what kind of methods do we got for, you know, cleaning up these messes that we've had companies make?
Drop your sign. Follow me.
Yeah. That's just it. Put your sign down and follow us. We'll show you. These are all the methods that we've researched on how you can actually filter this water, make it pure again, and, you know, introduce it back into the system, and even problems that are caused, which I had mentioned on the Mad Science Show some time back about duckweed and watermill, you know, where I first thought this was a disaster because my pond was dying and everything, but what I didn't realize was that it was nature's way of trying to balance everything back out to where it should have been to begin with. And my farmer, you know, he's a good guy. He's got a family, and, you know, I met him in person. He's a really nice individual, but his methods by which he fertilized his ground using anhydrous ammonia and, you know, manures or whatever, different types of fertilizers and even pesticides or whatever, all that stuff, he grew an awesome crop. But in the process of him growing his awesome crop, then when it rained, that water runoff, which would come down his terraces down into my pond, made my pond so super highly nutrient rich that the duckweed and watermill just grew out of hand. I mean, it's just it grew so fast that it only took one day to start, and then every day after it doubled until the pond was completely green. Well, I want to try to figure out how to get rid of all that. And I looked in on all these different problem solvers out there on YouTube, and I've come across a whole bunch of things that I didn't know about duckweed and watermill. It can be used as fish food. It can be used as people food. It has to be cooked properly because of the little spiny things. So I even learned the pros and cons of this. It can be used for biofuel. It could be used for fertilizer. It's amazing stuff, and it's water. It's nature's water filtration system for just such an emergency that the pond would get out of balance.
So if you don't have duckweed in your pond, get some.
Yeah. Well, if you have the right breed of fish in there, like perch will eat it. There's different fish that will eat it just as it is. That's its fish food.
If you know how to handle it, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But you got to learn how to handle it first.
So my question is this. If you know that the world is in a mess and you want to try to preserve the problem solvers of the world, and who are the problem solvers? So you're watching this little kid in school, right? He's doing amazing. He's learning everything. He's graduating from college or high school at 16 years old and already got 2 years of college. How do you preserve that, you know? Well, first off, you're going to preserve that by inspiring that individual to be the best that they can possibly be and to allow them to think and speak and share ideas with you and to try to keep them motivated. There's in this system out here, there's a lot of people that will tell you that things just can't be fixed. It's too messed up.
That's wrong.
And it's frustrating, especially for a guy like me who believes it can be fixed, because I see the solutions available, but if you aren't willing to enact those solutions, if you'd rather hold up that sign instead of setting your sign down and following a problem solver over there and look, hey, this is how the nature does it, and this is how you could do it mechanically, and this is even chemically, you could do it safely this way, because these are all natural materials that, you know, will, you know, interact with the system in the right way. So there are solutions. There's solutions for every single problem that we've got, from pollution to fuel or whatever. And even the ways that we use fuel these days. Just before this show, I was basically eavesdropping on a conversation between Thomas and Raymond, and they were talking about vaporizing fuel, and then as I'm listening to this thing progress and them troubleshooting how to actually make a vapor carburetor and the proper way to get this thing to work out right, I'm impressed and I'm inspired, because I believe that if they actually had the resources necessary to do what it is that they talked about, that it would be a problem that would be solved like that. And instead of using hundreds of gallons per year in your vehicles, you'd be using a fraction of that, which would take you back to those people holding the signs up against the whole doggone fuel industry, coal, oil, whatever, you know. Because now if you ain't wasting so much and you actually got a clean burn on that vehicle, then they just got their problem solved. No more need to hold the sign up. It's not pollution anymore. It's been resolved. We could fix that. That's what I'm trying to say. But if you see these young men and women out there and you see them studying and learning things, don't lock the gate and tell them this is only as far as you can go. Say, these are other ideas that other people have had out there. Take a look at them and let me know what you think about it. And when that little kid raises his hand up in class and kind of questions something that was said in science because it just mechanically doesn't make sense in his mind why you say that this is the laws of physics and this is basic science and then this is what we say is going on, and you don't allow them to question that. That's not how it works. That's not the scientific observation. So, putting all the political and all the who did it and whose fault it is and ideologies aside, that's why I want to try to move this conversation into a direction of actually ideas that will protect the mindsets of the individuals who actually are already standing with at least one foot outside the box and they're ready to solve problems. This world can be fixed, even if it's in the mess that it's in right now, which seems to be incredibly overwhelming. The odds, like I was telling Raymond before the show, casinos, the odds are against you when you go in a casino. Chances are you're going to come out of there broke unless you understand that system and how it functions and you got the wisdom to basically game the system and walk out, you know, a winner. That's a very rare breed. Those are problem solvers.
For your system to work.
Yeah, exactly. So, we need to protect our problem solvers, both young and old, because they are becoming a rare breed. The solutions are available. You got thousands and thousands of protesters for so many different causes under the sun, blaming this is that person's fault, this is that color of people's fault, this is the person over there's fault, it's the government's fault, it's everybody's fault, but it never falls down to the individual as your own responsibility. If I walk down to my local creek and I see an old tire down there, I could just leave it there if I like. You know, I could just walk right on by it. Or I could actually just clean that area up and do something, recycle that tire into something, you know, useful. My wife makes potted plants, planters out of it.
Yeah, that's a cool idea.
Yeah.
Put, things in order.
So,
and it'll work.
That's where I want to start here, folks. And, you know, where we go from here is all up to us. It's up to you. The individual, you know, like I said, I didn't mention where you're listening in because I figure right now you probably already figured that out. And so we can get past all those shortcuts or making some shortcuts around that to get right straight to the gravy of today's show, and that's making this world better. So with that said, we got Jermaine here. He's all the way from the Netherlands. We got Raymond here. He's all the way from Texas, and I'm going to get this right when I say it. Thomas is from Arizona.
Oklahoma.
I didn't get it right again. Don't feel bad, because yesterday it was Arkansas.
Right.
I'm not from Oklahoma, though. I'm Raymond, I'm a transplant from somewhere else out east.
Transplant.
You said yesterday Virginia.
Right. Originally from Virginia, transplanted to Texas. I was Texan 10 years before I got to Texas.
Okay, well, where was you originally from?
Pennsylvania.
Wasn't born there, but I got there as quick as good.
Anything I need to know about you, Jermaine? Well, I'm from the land of misery. I'm born and raised here, and I've been out and about and come back, and this is where I'm staying. The weather, if you don't like it, wait a few hours and it'll change, and so on and so forth.
Right.
This is where my family
is.
Well, you know, actually, you stop to think about it.
Yeah.
Our main claims to be from the Netherlands, Dutch, right?
Yeah.
But actually, he's like an American. He's the Heinz 57 because his daddy's from England and his grandparents were from somewhere else. So, you know, this whole world is kind of a mixed the thing.
I'm
and
French.
That's what we're trying to do here is get people all over the world to pull together.
I'm French, Canadian, / Cherokee.
Right.
That's a wild breed there. That's probably why my hair is all jacked up. Because I'm confused.
Well, I've got a little Scottish, Irish, English. There's some Bohemian, a little American Indian somewhere. And I really believe that somewhere deep in my my ancestry, there was I've got a great black grandmother. So I'm a Heinz 57, full-blooded American, man. I'm not African-American. I'm not
Irish-American.
I am American.
Then what I'd like to say is that we got a best of the best of a mixture of all the races represented in this room right
here. No joke.
So, you know, we can get past all that. We don't even need, that's not even a problem anymore. We got that resolved.
Races, you mean breeds?
Breeds, whatever, there you go.
You don't call a Labrador a race of dog.
Right.
They're just all dogs.
Okay, so we're...
Just because they look different doesn't mean they're not still a canine.
We're a representation of the best values. Breeds.
The best of each and every breed.
There you go.
The best.
So the
best of the best.
So now that we got that resolved, we got all kinds of ideas out there in alternative energy that we've been working on together and actually talked about this morning. I think we ought to, each one of us, is maybe write down a list of projects that we'd love to see get done and see, you know, do kind of like a social experiment between us to see how many of these we could actually get resolved in a year.
Right.
and put these videos out there for you to take and run with. And you know, there's probably some inventions that we're probably going to have to keep under our hat so that we can try to build a way to generate some revenue so we can actually fund our research, because
or not disrupt somebody else's game that they've got going on.
Right.
Yeah.
Unnaturally, therefore.
Right.
Yeah.
It's better to keep it under the hat so it doesn't.
We're going to try to work on the simplest projects first to show people that we are working toward it. We're putting our sign down.
You know what I mentioned to him yesterday? I think it would be really cool because they have foreign exchange, and there is a college in Warrensburg. I would love to see him be a foreign exchange. And
oh, man, that would be kick butt, wouldn't it?
That would be awesome. But
he doesn't have to stop going to college after he gets 4 years.
No, he doesn't.
You can always go for a PhD.
Yeah.
If you get one, you can always go get another one.
So we'll inspire you to get all the way to the top, boy. But,
hey, they are people that are literally professional students.
Yeah.
They literally are what you call overqualified, meaning that the people look at them and go, you don't know how to work.
You know that word, overqualified?
And teach.
Do you know I actually got rejected on a job because they said I was overqualified?
Well, they did that. I did that one time. Really?
Capabilities, because you know more than any of the people in any individual field. At that point, the only people who will hire you will be the university.
Right.
They'll either hire you to do research that you're interested in, so you won't care about the money. You won't treat it like you're doing them a favor to help them
Professor
out.
Professor Fishwick.
They will treat it as, this is my opportunity to do something I want to do and do the best I can.
Right. You know, like...
You
like,
do kind of look like Sheldon Cooper.
All right. Well, we got Professor Fishwick on his way.
To be. Professor to be Fishwick.
That's all right. I'm just going to go ahead and start calling him Professor.
There you go. Me too. That's a good idea. I was calling him Bruja del Mar, which is Warlock of the Ocean, because he's from the Netherlands. He lives 30 feet below sea level, and he does magic.
That freaks me out.
Or we're going to just start calling him Aquaman.
Aquaman. There you go. Aquaman.
Do you guys carry around life preservers? I would.
Well, you know, actually, something to think about it now. His dad is into picking up old tractors and so forth, so they've got all these big inner tubes. You know, he can float the whole family around for months.
There's an invention there.
Right,
for, listen. For emergency purposes, just in case, anything goes awry, a dam or a dike breaks or whatever, you got this really cool-looking vest. It's all classy, and it fits with the modern-day style.
May
but
West.
The moment it hits seawater, puffs up.
The old May West life preserver, it was just like a vest, keep you a little bit warm, but the moment you hit the water, bam, bam, it was up. And your head was above water.
That's all you're cool. Bobbing up instead of... That's cool. Going down the stream with
I think that with you being under sea level like that, probably the smart thing to do would be to start recycling all the plastics that you guys can take in from the other countries too.
Build a jug raft.
And make foam bedding to go underneath the roads, underneath the buildings, everything else. So if it did get flooded, it just float up above it. Giving them time to go ahead and actually fix whatever.
Do you know the people that live down by the river over here, down by Missouri River, because it floods, it leaves its bank a lot? They actually have housing that goes all the way down along the river, and they got big, giant poles, and their entire house is sitting on a pontoon, even the garage. So they pull their car in the garage, they go inside their house, and they got a boat attached to the front door so that if it floods overnight, the house just goes up like this. And even their electrical's like on a springy cord, and so it just rides up like this. And whenever you look outside and there's water outside, they just jump in a boat and go to shore and go to work.
No big deal. Just everyday life,
See, that's problem solved.
Exactly.
They want to live down by the river, but they know that there is going to be flooding by the river.
Right.
So, people make a conscious decision. And from what I understand about where you come from, Jermaine, you guys didn't have a whole lot of land to work with, but you basically built it on the water.
Right.
So that's pretty cool.
A little bit at a time.
Yeah.
A couple thousand acres here, a couple thousand acres there.
Is it anything like Venice?
No.
No.
Absolutely not.
Better?
Oh, Venice is all water. But not all water, but mostly water. But where he's from, they actually build dikes, pump the water out. There's where their windmills are. Man, they got some beautiful windmills
over there.
Never mind. I could go on for hours on the windmill.
Did you say 30 feet below sea level?
That's 30 yards. Meters, right? I think it's 30 meters, which a meter is
way
three.
Below sea level.
Because a meter is 3 5/8 inches more than a yard.
But you know how much engineering had to go into that?
Yeah.
That's why you actually asked out people to make your dikes.
Yeah, that's what.
Right.
Look, everybody, we're going to call Jermaine if we got any flooding issues around here.
Good,
they got that problem resolved.
Yeah, the thing, you mentioned something about the Dutch people taking scrap plastic off. It was just a few months ago that I got a notice that the Dutch scientists had just scientists have made plastics that are biodegradable, okay? But the Dutch have developed a biodegradable plastic that is economically viable. That's the whole thing right there. To make biodegradable plastic is one thing, but to make it economically efficient to where people can afford it and you can use it. And the plastic they have created or generated can actually be consumed by human beings.
Well, you said
it's not just biodegradable.
You said something that kind of I said this a while back. It's been a long time. We were doing a show about people recycling and stuff. It was probably years back did this show, but every household generates a lot of trash.
Right.
And most generally, they pay somebody to take that trash away from the doggone house.
Right.
Now, I know through different types of physics that you could actually separate different types of materials using all kinds of different methods, from static electricity to water or stuff like that. What I don't understand is I have seen trash compactors in my life, but basically that just squishes all your trash into a block and then it goes out to the dump anyway.
Right.
What's the difference between that and making a recycling machine that everything you throw in there, because when it comes down to recycling, they'll do it when it's cool, when it's a fad.
Then
it gets boring and whatever. They stop putting their recycling bins out on the deal. So you designed this machine.
Do you know why they stopped doing that?
Because they ain't make no money or it's too
much
effort?
There's no benefit to doing it. It's actually consuming more than it is to just go get more raw resources from the ground.
So my deal, though, would be that if you could actually turn that trash into something usable for your family, such as energy, for example, like if you had this machine that... No matter what you threw down in there, I don't care whether it's your wasted sandwich or whatever, you threw it down in there, and through all the process that we know of buoyancy and other things like that, we can separate all these materials into their separate containers, even dry it out. You got plastic in this one, you got metals over in this one.
It's called a flux capacitor.
Well, we don't want to send it back in time or forward in time. Somebody's going to get mad. Stop sending us all your trash.
You know we always got to crack a joke somewhere.
Well, that was Mr. Fusion. It wasn't the flux capacitor.
Why couldn't we do what you're talking about? And then for a joke, name it flux capacitor.
It was Mr. Fusion.
Yes.
The flux capacitor was what sent them through time. And
right.
Mr. Fusion was when he was putting all the trash into the top,
right.
And that was the fuel.
Yeah, banana peel, apple cores.
So until we get a Mr. Fusion,
right.
We can separate it and use the chemistry and the mechanics of everything to where when you could actually use it like a piggy bank.
Thomas already knows how to chemically take kudzu and turn it into crude oil.
Well, there you go.
He knows how to do that.
Anything biological can be turned into a fuel source. So you could actually, all the household waste could be put into a system that would actually break it down and make methane or... that stuff like that, where you could actually run generators. So the technology is there, but you're not going to get a mainstream industry to do something like that.
It comes back to what I just said about the Dutch making bioplastic economically feasible. All right, we can make these machines that can turn trash into fuel or this or that or whatever, but it's doing it economically.
Right.
I mean, you know, why should somebody buy fuel made from trash plastic for $10 a gallon when they can buy it made from crude oil at $3 a gallon? I mean, it's got to be economically viable. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the real secret right there. It's not can we do it, it's can we do it to where the people of the world can accept it financially. Right.
Well, that's what I'm saying is, well, imagine if you had a system where you threw all your trash in there. We out here in the country, we're allowed to burn our trash.
Right.
And so, basically, there's a piggy bank out there of all different types of metals that I'm going to build a recycling system to where all I got to do is scoop it up with my Bobcat, jump it in there, and just spin it around and separate all the different types of materials and metals. You know, magnetic metals will go one way and the others the opposite way and stuff like that. But
well, you know, yesterday I was mentioning things about different experiments and so forth that Jermaine has done, put videos on YouTube. And to me, one of the small, exciting parts about what he does is everything he does, he builds it out of scrap and trash that he's found on the side of the road or in somebody's trash can or in the back of somebody's barn or garage, you know. Oh. He builds everything out of trash. But the thing is, he's got that artistic touch that when he gets done, it's a piece of artwork.
Well, he's making most of that stuff out of trash because it's not big enough for the thing they thought they were going to use it for. It's actually useful materials for smaller projects.
Exactly.
It's recycling and repurposing, and that's my entire lab. Everything you saw in that lab, Jermaine, was all dug out of the dump. People threw it away. I got all my copper wire for free. I got all my magnets for free. I got every bit of piece, even the plumbing, and I even repurposed old coffee cans and stuff like that. But the reason why I did that was to show other people that if I can do this out of junk, imagine what you could do with precision.
Yeah.
That's the whole key. But I honestly believe that you could build a separating system that would be affordable to each household, but that system would separate these materials, and actually their trash would pay them back.
Right.
You know, remember we talked about this back in the old days. They used to have a doggone program where they had a 10-cent deposit or even a nickel deposit a bottle.
Right.
You couldn't find bottles back then.
No.
When the moment they took that the deposit thing off of there, you could find bottles
everywhere. No joke. You know, at my age, I got to tell this. When I was a kid, you go up in the store, you buy a Coke or a Pepsi, you gave the man 5 cents. You went outside, you drank the Coke or Pepsi, and you went back in and got 2 cents for the bottle.
Yeah.
So the Coke was actually 3 cents. Candy, a Hershey's candy bar was 3 cents or two for a nickel. Now, what is it today? $1.39, $1.69 for a Hershey's candy bar?
Look at that drawer right there. That top drawer. There's right there.
Yeah.
The green. Yeah, look at that top drawer. What do you see?
Bottle caps.
Yeah, pick those bottle caps up. I know because you're into chemistry, you'll know what type of plastic
HDC.
That is.
HDPE.
Yeah.
You can tell, too, what's polyethylene-based, whether it's a high-density, low-density, medium-density, ultra-high molecular weight. When you take a lighter to it and light it up a little bit, get a little smoke come off of it, it smells like the smoke that comes off a wick from a candle when you snuff the candle out. You see that little wick come off?
Hold on a second.
Same smell.
Can you think of any uses for that type of plastic?
You can, if you keep the oxygen off it while you're heating up, you can melt it down and extrude it in any shape you want. You can, while it's in a very, very, very hot state where it's very liquid, you can whip it up into a foam. That's how they make polyethylene foam, closed cell foam.
Cool.
This is what I was saying, is that that is the primary plastic that is the problem in the gyres that are out in the ocean where there's those giant, almost island-sized... swirls of plastic. All the other plastic is broken down because the UV rays destroy it.
Yeah.
But because of the water and the amount of sunlight that's along the, the amount of sunlight that can penetrate the atmosphere near the equator, this stuff still has a long enough time to last before ultraviolet gets broken down.
you can just set up two ships out there, run a net between the two to catch this stuff as the current comes between it, and anchor the two ships down so they stay put,
right,
and let the current bring the plastic to you, right, so the fish can swim away because they're swimming faster than the current. You don't catch any fish. You just catch plastic and trash. Turn the make sure the net is like a giant conveyor belt, so there's a backside and a front side, and you can rotate that around to bring it to one side and collect all that trash that's sticking to it.
One ship is full,
melt it all down,
and go the other way so it can fill the other ship.
So basically, this is what an idea that I came up with that I'm going to make an attempt to do myself. I wanted to do this program that I call Bottle Caps for Science.
Right.
And what I want to do with this program is I want to go out and get these buckets made out of this particular style of plastic, and I want to put a sign on there that says Bottle Caps for Science, and I want to put them in different stores where they sell, you know, soft drinks and stuff like that. And with a little small explanation on there, and they actually deal with the website, and so that people, if they have any more questions, can ask me what this is all about. I want to use other people's trash to generate funds to basically finance my research. So, well, they're going to throw it away anyway. It's going to end up in the trash.
Right.
But if
basically,
the lawsuit passes,
you're taking something that somebody considers valueless and turning it, or even a negative value, because they have to invest value into it, money, to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And turn it into value that you can turn around and sell back to people who want it.
And make
that,
and
put that, by putting that work and effort and ingenuity into it, you get that money off of it to spend on your other ingenuity that you want to create.
That's it, right there, because here's the thing, you know, something as simple as a door stopper.
Yeah, right.
Everybody has a door stopper in their house because you want to hold the door open. Well, you think that would make a good one? Do you think that using knowledge that you've learned from injection molding, that you could make a crude wedge shape deal and melt that? Because it's got a lower melting temperature and it's easy to, you know, to get formed.
Or just run it through a 3D printer and then you can actually control the shape and print a cup that is a giant spiraled straw stuck together.
Yeah.
So
the cup and the straw are one.
Bottle Caps for Science would have a door wedge out there. When every time somebody seen this and it said Bottle Caps for Science on there, they'd be like, what's this all about?
Right.
I just took one man's trash and turned it into treasure and funded research to help to, you know, benefit the world by showing, by example, that what would have been trash now turned into a positive.
Well, that would be a good iconic thing, so it'd stick in people's mind to know that you've got this project going on, but don't stick with just bottle caps.
No,
They have,
that's just a starting point.
Listen, they already have 3D pens. Run plastic in, and it squirts plastic out the other end after heating it, so you can stick it together the way you do a hot melt glue gun, except you're actually building stuff up out of hard plastic that uses the pop bottles themselves. You cut it into strips and run the strips down inside of it.
Oh, I'd love to get
one. You just start it up. They've got a cutter, too, that they provide with it, where you cut the top off, and then you cut down into it with this thing and just start pulling what comes out the other side of the cutter and keep going until you end up with essentially...
And the bottle rotates, so it gives you a long string.
Right.
You get a
plastic lace, the same way they make leather laces, where it's a flat sheet, and they start in the middle, pull out, and it spirals around. The leather will just keep spinning around your hand as you keep pulling through, and when you get done, you end up... when you stretch it, it comes out straight. It goes from that coil that you created by cutting it out of the leather into a straight strap of leather that's a 6-inch in diameter piece of scrap leather will turn out like 12 feet of lace.
Right.
And then you can lace boots, you can weave it to make anything from sheets of leather to a whip.
That's problem solving in his mind.
If you can weave a whip, then you can weave a long rope out of it too and make a leather
weave
rope.
Weave baskets, you weave, once it's in the strips, you can do almost anything you want to with it. Talk about arts and crafts. I mean, you know, you can weave it into rope. You can weave it into
real world example. Okay. I have a 3D printer I'm building out of a CNC mill. Pre-existing CNC mill. It's a big enough mill that it actually has drag chain carriers, meaning it's a bunch of plastic components that are interlocked together, and whenever you get done, they create a tube running through them that's flexible. So you can drop the cords and the cables that run to the different motors and whatnot on the moving parts, to keep it from getting kinked up or caught up in the motor. And I ran out of room to run the cabling for the laser that I'm mounting on the head, so I took those plastic bottles, the clear part of pop bottles, I cut it all apart and made wider strips and then kinked the edges to make little rectangular openings when it was folded over, that when you get done folding it completely over, each one created two tabs sticking off with a hole punched through it that I could then put a little screw down into one of the pieces of the plastic on each of the drag chain carrier components and ran the cable for the laser right beside it through that. I made my secondary and extended it using that.
Now here's the thing. What he's talking about is a necessity for a 3D printer. 3D printers are getting to be the big thing in life. So if we can teach people that are going to get a 3D printer how to do this out of old pop bottles, old water bottles, look how many water bottles are not going to wind up out in the ocean.
Oh, also,
they're being put to a good use.
Also, I was telling Jermaine yesterday when we were walking around, he asked me about all these bottles, that he was wondering what all these bottles were about. Well, I wanted to do a wall using temperature differences where you could actually mount all these bottles. I got all these bottles.
Right.
Mount this, the end in the sun, and the other one down at an angle on the cool side, so you got a temperature difference. Do you know what that would do?
Yeah.
It'd heat up on this side. Any atmosphere that got up inside that bottle would condense and cause moisture to drip out the deal. So you could quite literally pull water right out of the air.
Right, yes.
Using these old bottles in a wall that, you know, I could make it in a, you know, in a manner which it'd look good. You know, it'd be beautiful.
I should have told him about this a long time ago. I've not gotten around to it yet, but I have gotten most of the components put together, and then I keep getting sidetracked. But I put together an aluminum T-slot structure specifically so that I can hold a 1,000 milliliter flask, which was an extra that I got from a kit that I wasn't going to use for anything else, and another smaller flask, and my Vigorex column, which is basically just a glass tube that you run a gas through. And it's deformed so that there's a whole bunch of surface area that you wouldn't have if it were just a tube. So the gas is passing through it, have to make a lot more chance of making contact with that cool glass surface to go back down to the temperature of the atmosphere. And I sprayed black spray and peel, you buy at Walmart, onto the 1,000 milliliter flask, and then added this black, it's a rubber coating spray on, rubber coating for like truck beds and stuff like that, around the outside of that, so when it's sitting out in the sun, that glass bottle is going to get really hot by absorbing all the sunlight. I put a space blanket onto a wire frame that I just made out of some wire. I think I got that at Home Depot or something like that. It was just a big coil that you use for fixing stuff and whatnot. I built a frame that sticks off the Vigorex column so that I could put space blanket, stretch it across that and glue it all down with a hot melt glue gun, and then I could rotate that thing so that that space blanket blocks it from the sun and it stays nice and cool while the chamber is getting hot, so all the water you put in that gets boiled off by the sun, evaporated, it goes through that chamber, goes to the Vigorex column, it gets directly connected to that the bottle at the bottom, and then there's a tiny little air gas outlet for anything that won't condense in that time, it can escape, but everything going through that is going to condense and turn into distilled water.
Right.
Now why would I do this? Do I want to drink distilled water that has all the nutrients taken out of it? No. What I want is I want to be able to fix my filters. I have a zero water filter from Walmart. One of the best water filters I've found so far on the market. You can put tap water in the top, fill it up, close it up, let that drain through the filter, and when you open it, it goes from smelling like tap water to smelling that intense chlorine smell that you smell at the swimming pool while water in the bottle has no taste at all. So it's actually blocking even the chlorine gas from going down into the water. But what do you do about that whenever that filter fills up and gets dirty like a sponge? You've got to wash it out.
Yeah.
I have a sonicator. I can take those filters apart because they're just snapped together as a cup-like piece of plastic with a hole in the bottom, and then there's a cap-like piece snapped down into it that has a little screen of plastic snapped down over it, and there's a bunch of material in different layers spread out in there. They are dirty. Take them apart, separate all the layers out, put them in the sonicator in a jar with distilled water.
Right.
And sonicate it so that not only are you getting it up to the level of dirtiness that the tap water was, but you get it to where it's like sludgy mud, and extract that, say, with 1 gallon of distilled water from the sun,
right,
I can clean out a filter that is clean, has most likely filtered over 1,000 gallons of water, that and put it secret. Back in service.
No, he's not. He's using way less water to clean the filter right. than the filter is filtering to where you can drink it.
And this is the thing. There are rare minerals that are detrimental to the human body, but they are useful for semiconductor production that you'd have to pay a fortune for in that sludge that I can put in the distillation system and run it through crystalline fractionalization to separate all those materials out and get the clean water that I used to clean it
right.
with back out of it and use it all over.
To where now you don't have sludge, you just got powder.
Wow.
Right. So I can be filtering tap water due to the first batch, then keep reusing the water and adding a little more tap water to it and save everything that's forming in that 1,000 milliliter bottle that gets left behind as it's boiled off and do crystalline fractionalization where you literally supersaturate distilled water while it's hot and then you cool it off and one chemical at a time will precipitate out of it until it's completely out. So you can do one batch, you filter it while it's cool, get all the crystals, salt crystals that form, then you take that water and you heat it up and let some of the water evaporate off of it, and then once it reaches temperature and it's evaporated for about 10 or 15 minutes, you take it out and let it cool and let everything condense right. and drop out of it again as it cools off. Filter that off. Keep it separate. Don't put it with the first batch until you know exactly what's in each batch. At some point, two components will filter out together because the last of one filters out and then the next one starts filtering out before you're completely cool. That one will have to go back through and be redone. But all the others, if you do this 100 times and there are 5 chemicals in it, you only have literally that one instance out of 100 in between each of those that is not pure enough, and the rest are all completely pure.
I don't know
chemicals.
If you're going to get to it or not, but if you pay attention to what he's saying,
all
these
attention.
Chemicals that he's taking out, you can separate them, and in many cities in the United States, as clean as the water is, many cities the water is dirty enough that the chemicals you can get out of the water will pay for your filtration system. I mean, come
well,
on.
Or more importantly, those chemicals yeah. are ready to be processed yeah. and used
exactly.
by something like
many years ago, I used to drive a bus.
Electronics and stuff like that, not just the
see that picture up there?
Yeah,
that's from my retirement. You know, when I retired from driving a bus, that right there, those are all the kids that used to ride my bus, and that was the bus that I drove. But it was a 12 or 13-year-old girl. When it was snowing outside, we got down this one little cul-de-sac, and the bus got stuck. Uh-huh. Well, she said, because her house was right there, she said, I'll be right back. And so she runs over to her house, and she grabbed their ash from their fireplace and threw it underneath the tire and says, try it now, and that bus walked right out of
right.
that doggone snow.
13-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Smart. Can you believe that?
I was like, yeah. yo, hey, that was pretty cool. I'm going to have to remember that, you yeah. know?
Well, but that's something else, too. Okay, we have cats. We have a litter pen. Our cats are mostly indoor. We try to keep one indoor. Right. It doesn't like it, so it gets fleas, and we have to do all kinds of nonsense to get rid of fleas. But because they use a litter pan, that means we're using
clay.
Essentially caliche clay
right.
in order to...
Yeah,
there we go. We're essentially using caliche clay that they're soiling, so I just take it out in the yard and I put something around it so that the rain will wash all that down to the ground and leave that pure clay, and I'm using that to extend the driveway
right.
into areas where basically it's just... like a bog when it gets wet and you get stuck.
Don't throw anything away. Everything's useful.
Well, that so clay,
caliche clay will
that
lock
kitty
up.
Kitty litter you can actually use to plug holes in your dams or for your ponds.
Yes, you can.
Right.
It will work.
It can. It's also one of the components that they use for making ceramics. There's a whole list of components they mix together to get just the right consistency when it's fired.
So
make objects, so you could actually use that and a couple other things. You go out and
just because
if you
cat,
have to
cat
purchase them
don't mean
to make
either.
Ceramic bricks
that can be cleaned
to
out.
Make a floor or a wall or a driveway or whatever too. And the rain is going to leach all the nastiness from the urine and the poop from the cat away. The plants want that stuff. They
so
want
we,
it diluted though. So
we
it'll
just
dilute it, spread it out, and you get free fertilizer too.
We just put out a few examples of what you can do with trash.
Right.
And it's, that's what I keep saying about this whole planet being, you know, the Earth is a recycler like you wouldn't believe. It recycles everything. Nothing gets wasted. And if our society went to that kind of mindset that we're not going to waste anything, and all the chemistry of what we've got actually in our trash could actually be turned into fuel that would at the very least supplement your energy bills. If you had a bio-waste system that would actually turn that into methane and store it in a safe manner, and then you could turn around and use that methane for heating purposes, or even to build a little miniature smelter that was part of the system that you use that fuel to melt off the aluminums and stuff like that, you know, you get a pretty good system like that. No, there wouldn't be no trash.
Right.
Okay. Stop a second, and let's go back to the original topic. How to protect those people.
Right. Yep. There you go.
The first thing everybody thinks is you're talking like a social justice warrior about safe spaces, right?
Yeah.
To protect emotions and blah, blah, blah. But what people aren't realizing is that there are tons of safe spaces for all kinds of purposes that are absolutely necessary. A refinery is a safe space for cracking crude oil in order to turn it into all kinds of other substances.
Right.
And the processes to recombine it without losing its energy. And if you didn't have that safe space to protect it from, say, you know, contaminants from the air or all kinds of other stuff, or thermal runaway that basically dissipates all your heat so you can't actually heat whatever it is you're trying to heat up, you couldn't achieve those goals.
Right.
So what we need is to a way to create an ecology of safe spaces for those creative minds to go to when they need to create. They don't have to be there all the time, but when they're wanting to work on something,
right,
not only are they safe from being contaminated by distractions or disruptions or an attempt to drain their resources of time and mind from them while they're working, and they can network together in order to basically help support each other, because you can get less work done with three people working together on one project than you can each one working independently for not doing it right. But if they are doing it right, they can get more work from three people than three independent people can get done.
If you put a
imagine how much more you can get from, say, 10 people, because it's an exponential growth if it's done right.
Yeah, but if you put a genius in a warehouse full of raw resources and leave him alone between his boredom and
I think, honestly, they would get a lot less done than you realize. Give them a time limit. You got to go back to the world to do your thing, but you get a month each year, you can work.
He said a genius. He actually met four or five people.
Right.
Well, either way, if you put me in a warehouse full of supplies and you tell me I got full run of the place and I got a week to stay here and do whatever, and so if I'm in there, I'm going to get bored. I'm going to get creative.
Okay, how about this? What if we gave you 2 weeks, but we told you a year ahead of time so you could plan
and be
ready to just jump on it when you got
four
there?
Four other people of the same mindset wanting to work on the same projects you're working on. Now, you go in here, you've already got a mindset for a project. You're not bored. But there's four other people that want to work on the same project, but so you've got five different minds looking at this. One comes up with this idea, and how many times have the four of us gotten together and, you know, one of us come up with a project working on and say something, and Devin say, well, what if you do this? Oh, well, wow, that's
well, great. I get what you're saying, but that's why my favorite show that ever was Junkyard Wars.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I love that show, man. You guys take it, you know, they got only so much time.
Why'd they ever take that off?
I don't know, but that was a good show. Man, they made all kinds of gizmos. Now, I'm sitting here yelling at the TV because I'm not part of the team, and they obviously can't hear me.
Right.
And I'm like, look over there, man. Use that.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sitting here because if I was part of the team, I would have been saying, yeah, we could use this over here for, you know, that.
That's when you go out by yourself with a dozen TV bricks. Solid foam rubber. They're red, and it's got TV brick written on it. And when you holler at TV and they can't hear you, throw a brick at it.
Well, here's the solution for the monetary issue for those ecologies, too. You have somebody that likes producing film. That's their gig. they show up with the team, and that's what they do is they organize.
Yeah, a dream team of cameramen.
So that they can basically output what's going on so everyone else can vicariously participate without actually showing up. Since not everyone can go, not everyone has the same skill set, but they really want to see it happen, so that it will give them that release to know that it's happening and it's being done.
And they can monetize their own videos and be able to make a profit off of that while helping to promote.
Hey, then you can start taking in sponsorships where basically instead of them giving you money to mention their product line or their company, they help you with supplies.
Yeah,
more junk to work with.
There you go.
Or even not junk, just you know.
And
their
you know how many government agencies out there are trying to give away old stock?
Right. Yeah.
There are actually companies out there who, if you happen to show up at the wrong time or right time in the wrong place or whatever, and they got some stuff they want to get rid of because they're trying to like upgrade the computers. I got probably 80-90% of all my computers for free.
Right.
Because the school was going to get rid of them. They're just going to trash them.
Right.
And that's why it doesn't have anything newer than 5 years old.
But I don't care. They do the job.
I know this feeling because I was like that too. There was actually a computer recycling place that I had to go to at night to get into the dumpster that people would throw their junk computers into.
Right.
Because the companies that were throwing those away, I'd get all kinds of other stuff like phone systems and whatnot where they would just throw it in the trash. I even got a video projector that I ended up selling after I fixed it for $2,400.
Okay.
And it put out a 1600 by 1200 resolution screen. This was back in 2003, 2004.
Because of lawyers and lawsuits today, get arrested and put a time for going to somebody's dumpster.
We can get past all that.
That thing literally, when it was tossed out, was still worth more than most people make in a month. And all I had to do was add some lenses that somebody else gave to me. Right. And it would put out a big enough screen that at the time I thought, man, video projectors aren't that well known. I can get an inverter for a truck, a pickup, put this thing in the bed of the truck and jack it up while I'm sitting on the side of the road and shine it onto a billboard on the side of the road that is still white because I didn't put anything on it. As the evening is dropping and the sun setting, and it would be bright enough to cover the whole thing, and people driving by would be able to see whatever I'm putting on.
But
made with recycled stuff.
Yeah, especially if it's during rush hour traffic. Now they're moving, inching along real slow, and they've got a billboard that is displaying like CGI fireworks on it.
Yeah, what I'm saying,
so it's interesting to look out, but not so distracting.
Where there's a will, there's a way, and what you just said was really important. About finding a place to put the stuff. Obviously, you don't want people just coming piling crud in there because you'll have 16 acres worth of mountain.
Right.
Well, they'd have to call and make reservation to bring stuff too because you're going to have so much room. But if this works and you actually monetize it and that works, other people will go, we need money, we need a place to work, and they will replicate what you've done, especially if you freely give away the framework that you designed it off of.
Right.
Then they can use that, even if it doesn't work perfectly, if they got a slightly different situation, they can then take what you have accomplished and build off of that to make sure it works for them.
These will start
showing up all over the world.
Wasn't it Patty or Barbara that mentioned that some towns, little big towns in, what she said, Nebraska? But anyway, there's little big towns that they'll actually give you if you can set up an infrastructure.
Right.
And if we could get one of those, just one, to get it started. And that would be a place where there would already be houses where people could sleep in. It wouldn't be livable, but, I mean, existable, so yes. Fix them up and have people come, like Thomas says, from all over. You know, they'd have to call, make a reservation, get some other buddies that are interested in the same thing, using our radio show, have other people that are interested in the same thing, and have a little work area for them to work in.
We would need to think about this, just for this, at some point, by
Stanley, for example, or Husky, somebody that would donate tools to be used.
Yeah.
How many people, when they get their vacation at the end of the year, either they can't go somewhere they would actually want to go, so they just take the pay and keep working, or when they take a vacation, they go with the family somewhere, like say they live in Maine and they go to Hawaii.
Right.
Well, what would stop that person if they really wanted to work on research, making their vacation at your facility, no matter where they are?
Wait, and at the facility, you dig a pond, all right, with duckweed, but it's clean. It's got a sandy beach, so while he or she is working on the project, the wife or husband and the kids can go spend the day at the lake.
Right. So how do you,
it would be a vacation.
Right, listen, this is the thing.
And do things they want to do.
Any ecology, though, you're looking at has a potential to offer you something you can experiment with. If you're in Hawaii,
right,
you could potentially be able to experiment with lava.
So,
or cooled lava stone.
Well, that's what I was talking about. You've got to start somewhere.
Yeah,
but in
right.
reality, to build this all over the world.
Yeah, so basically right. What you brought up by bringing the equation back in, how do you protect these people, is actually give them a place
where they
to
can
go,
get together
to
at least part of the time.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
So there's a solution right there by our little dream team right here, that if you want to get this this kind of thing started, just show by example of how and what could be done.
Yeah.
It wouldn't cost nothing.
Right.
Really.
The trick there is that it would essentially give people who want to make some sort of change like that the ability to do so with the least amount of inconvenience to changing their life. They can still work all
yeah.
year, while they're paying for their family and their house and all that other stuff, and just use their vacation because everything's already set up for them.
Right.
So
and just show up, research, go home, going, wow, I accomplished something. I'm ready. I'm energized and ready to go back to work, so I can get back out there the next 2 weeks.
Right.
And if they can patent something, you allow them to have spaces where they try what they're doing, so they can release it when they have the patent, and do whatever they're going to do with that, so they can eventually maybe leave their job and go full time designing stuff and creating stuff that makes the world better.
Exactly.
So instead of these folks out there holding up the sign with the wooden stick and the paper sign saying "Save the trees," they could be over there on this land beautifying it by planting some more.
Don't drop your sign.
Lower it and bring it with you.
We might be able to make something out of that.
Well, this is the other thing,
too. Don't throw your sign away. Bring it with you.
This is the other thing, too. Whatever community you're building this close to, because with the one that we've been talking about putting together, we need two criteria that needs to be covered. One is that we need to have the right, because there's no restrictions, to bring in mobile homes and stuff like that that people have gotten rid of. They don't want it. Since we're trying to start this up cheaply, and then fix them up, and they aren't going to complain about the fact that we set them up, like there's no homeowners association or anything like that, and it needs to have access to good internet service of some sort, so that the people working there can still have full communication access to the rest of the world, not only for emergencies, but also for their research.
All right,
think about this a minute. Look here. You got 10,000 protesters, each one holding a sign they spent $5
Probably build a house.
Protesting and complaining. Now all of a sudden they don't do this. They take
their
$5 and send
it
to this little town and invest it in this town
to start
for people to use to better the world, not just complain about it.
Because
to actually do something.
Here's the issue: they're trying to lobby their government to produce a law that's going to restrict yet even more free thinkers. And instead of them lobbying the government, they could take those resources and focus it in on showing other people how they could do it right.
Right.
Because the government ain't going to get it done. They're too busy.
Don't spend $5 to make a sign to complain to the government. Donate it to somebody that's really trying to do something.
Okay.
The solution that, like what he just touched on, the solution is not to make a law to force something to happen.
Right.
To make the need for the law obsolete.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, check this out, folks. Listen to this. I mentioned earlier about wood ash, and what I was trying to tell you about recycling, how nature is the best recycler. There's a few uses that just pop up when you Google this. You can Google it as the 10 uses as actual a link right there. Did you know you could de-skunk your pets with a handful of rubbed on your Fido's coat to neutralize, when a dog gets sprayed by a skunk?
You're right.
That stuff stinks, man.
Yeah. Well,
but you can use that to neutralize it.
All
right, well, you can hide stains on pavement with it. You know, all these oil stains out there on concrete or whatever in your driveway, you can use it to cover that up. You can use it to enrich your compost for your gardening.
Right.
Because it has nitrogen in it. Right. And you can block garden pests with it. And the one I said earlier about the girl that showed me how to get out of the snow bank with the deal, you can melt ice with it.
All right, here's the thing.
Hold on, I'm not done yet.
Go ahead.
You can control pond algae with it.
Right.
You can pump up your tomatoes by giving basically more nitrogen in there. And you can clean glass fireplace doors with it.
Right. And some people would complain about that 13-year-old girl throwing that ash out on the road. Well, she's polluting. No, she's not. She's feeding the rain and the snow's going to melt. It's going to wash it off in the grass and it's going to act like fertilizer. Yeah. Come on, man.
That's the thing. But here's the deal. A lot of people will complain about burning firewood. You got to save the trees. Well, in the process of burning firewood, because nature does it all the time.
Oh, yes.
Lightning's nature's tree trimmer, and when you get a forest fire, and then you come back a little while later, and you look at how green that is, and it's not overgrown anymore.
Right.
Nature cleans it out.
Right.
Puts everything back where it wants it, and then it looks beautiful there.
You know, the forest people in Florida started several years ago. They actually sectioned off parts of the Everglades, and deliberately set fires.
Did intentional burns.
An intentional burn every 3 to 4 years, because what it does is it burns off the leaves and the dead matter from the trees, and to where it's not, in other words, if you don't burn it off, you go 10 or 15 years, there's enough dead matter to light on fire that it actually catches the trees on fire. But every 3 or 4 years, there's not enough to burn hot enough to catch the trees on fire, so you burn out the undergrowth. And your forest is much healthier, plus the ash from the burn is from fertilizer.
All right, well, there were two more that, one of them that wasn't on that last list was what you could make soap. Soaking ash in water makes lye.
Oh, right.
How many uses can you think for lye, man?
They used to do that to make soap.
But here's my point. These folks were hollering about, you know, burning firewood. There's actually some people want to make it illegal to use a fireplace right, because it supposedly sends, you know, carbon emissions up in the air. But in the process of burning firewood,
right,
you know, because physics says that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So you burn that firewood, you use the heat, some of the heat gets wasted. Some of the byproducts of burning that firewood ends up in the chimney, and if you don't buy a certain type of log to get the creosote out, you can start a chimney fire. So what you get up inside that deal is another fuel source that if you extracted that soot and stuff out of there, you got, you know, carbon and stuff that you could turn around and use for another fuel source or other purposes, plus 10 or more different things that you can do with just the ash alone. So in the process of burning that firewood, you created more resources.
Exactly.
That's the whole thing. And every bit of trash that you generate in your house could be turned into some useful product, and that would take all the landfills away.
Right.
You know, would that put them out of job? No, because there's so much other stuff that they could be doing with that same equipment. And, you know, there's always going to be the lazy people that aren't going to recycle. So, right, you know.
Always.
But you got to protect the brilliant minds of the world and give them a place to go. In your community, I guarantee you, in every single community out there, there's one building that the city owns for whatever purpose that is vacant, and it's basically just going to sit there and eventually get tore down.
Right.
So why not take this piece of deal right there and get a meeting with your community and ask problem solvers.
Right.
Ask all the problem solvers in your community. If we had this building right here, and you know all the problems that are in this community, what do you think that you could do with whatever resources that we... Like here, up here, not too far from me, they have a trash day where everybody can put all their things they want to get rid of, refrigerators or couches or whatever, or, you know, appliances or whatever they don't want anymore. They put it out on the curb, and the city truck will come around, pick it all up, and the city truck goes on to a piece of land that the city owns and just piles it all up, and it just kind of sits there and rots and deteriorates. So now they got this mountain of trash that they can't get rid of. But if you took, instead of that city day going to the place to dump it like that, You took it around to this building
right.
and stored it in a warehouse. Now, what would these problem solvers be able to do with all these materials?
Right.
Exactly. It would be brilliant.
It would. It would. And you're right. Every city, every town, there's some building somewhere that's not being used.
Yeah.
And it could be used for just a gathering center for... Heck, you could just get people to talk about the problems in their neighborhood. I mean, and that would be a big boon right there, to talk about the problems in your neighborhood.
Yeah, and I could actually sit down with the farmers and I could say, hey, you know, you guys do wonderful things. You feed a lot of people with your hard work, but do you know that there's a way that I could save you a whole lot of money by something that you're doing without, no ill intentions? You're not intending on doing this, but you're actually causing a disruption in the environment, but you could turn this into a plus and not have to pay for fertilizer anymore, or even diesel fuel.
Right.
A lot of these tractors run off of diesel fuel, and if you understand the basic science of biofuel, you can turn that doggone algae or even the duckweed or watermill into
diesel fuel.
Diesel fuel.
Simple.
Yeah.
So now they
can make their own fuel for their tractor.
Right.
They have their own fertilizer, and right. any livestock that they got, like chickens or ducks or whatever, or even fish for that matter, they have free fish food for.
Right.
And they can take a little tiny piece of their land, which there's always on every single farm. There's a low spot where you just can't, take the tractor down in there, or it always stays wet, and you can section that off and guide all your runoff into that right there.
Every place except Illinois and Kansas.
And you grow your duckweed.
Illinois, Kansas, if you walk on a low spot, you better dig it.
Well, it's supposedly flat all over, but every farm that I've ever seen in my entire life,
yeah.
everywhere I've been, there's always one spot the farmer can't use because they get their tractor stuck in.
You don't need to go to Illinois.
Yeah.
Well, I've seen an inch of rain in Illinois, and from the road, the only thing you could see was water for as far as you could
yeah.
see. I
mean, but even
it is flat out there,
Lola. But even in those types of scenarios
yeah.
right there, there are ways that there's a lot of places that are flood zones.
Right.
Ask him. He lives, 30 feet below the sea level?
Right.
All right, now, if anybody, his culture has already solved that issue. Now,
right.
they could teach you
yes.
how to guide that water where you want it to go as opposed to where... And so, if, a state over, they got a doggone drought. You said before, they got infrastructures already in place that you could actually... stop pumping this through there and run off that drain water over there to their
right.
deal. Just by re-engineering our infrastructure,
right.
modifying it with already existing infrastructures, we could solve
flooding
issues.
In the United States, every time we've ever had a drought in a major area of the United States, there was always another area
that was having
flooding. And yet we have piping. And we have 3 million miles. Of underground piping in the United States.
All over
the United States. We could go to... Hey, who in the world in the Mississippi River Basin is going to be driving around when there's 5 feet of water everywhere?
How many tankers do you think are sitting idle right now in this world?
Yeah, a lot.
So imagine this. You got a flood going on, and these people are wanting to keep the water out of their house, obviously.
Right.
So you got a team of people that say, we got all these drivers on standby. We'll just keep bringing these trucks in. They'll pump these trucks full of water, and we'll take them over to Kansas where they're having a drought right now.
Right.
And fill up the farmers' ponds and reservoirs and stuff like that. That's the whole thing. Where there's a will, there's a way. We're watching this disaster over there. All these poor people, they're dying of thirst. Well, they're standing next to the ocean.
Right.
But why?
Tell me. Think about this now. All of our aircraft carriers, I don't know how many we have right now, but every one of them can desalinize and make potable drinking water out of ocean water, 50,000 gallons every 24 hours, and they're using their nuclear power plants on the ship. Now, wait a minute. What percentage of the power from that nuclear power plant is actually producing fresh water, and what percent is running the rest of the ship? What if you took that power plant and designed it to do nothing but desalinate water? How many hundreds of thousands, how many millions of gallons of water in a 24-hour period could you desalinize? Well, think about that a minute.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, because just on that boat alone, do you realize that one of those ships could actually power a city?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
How much energy they produce.
Well, actually, Earthquake here is a small city.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking 5,000-6,000 people.
But yeah. if the governments of the world and the people of the world really seriously wanted to resolve problems, even what we just explained, you got a flood over here, they're having a drought over there, you bring tankers in, you pump water out of here, you take it over there. And if you're taking that water away from that, it's not going to roll back into the flood zone. Right. You know, you're taking it away.
And you're not taking so much water out of the ocean that you're going to cause the salinity to rise.
Yeah.
Because the fresh water you're taking, you're pumping into people's houses, you're pumping on farm. Where is
you'll
it going to go?
You'll never
it's going to go right back to the ocean.
Yeah, you'll never be able to get rid of that salt.
No. The thing is, you're not going to desal. I mean, you're not going to increase the salt content of the water by taking out a couple million gallons a day.
Because
it's going to go right back.
Hey, you won't increase the salinity of the water anyway, because if you take the water out and desalinate it, throwing that salt back into it, it's already super saturated. That salt will just precipitate out to the bottom of the ocean.
Exactly.
So, either way, it still shows that, you know, even when you talk about worst case scenarios, I'm still amazed by Jermaine's culture, because the way that they're actually engineering, that is some serious engineering.
Yes, it is.
And there's a vast amount of knowledge right there that if they would sit down and listen to his culture, they would solve all these problems over here, like that, you know, the big deal that happened down there, what was that?
Louisiana.
Yeah, it was a mess down there, man, during Katrina.
Louisiana, what was it? Baton Rouge? Oh, New Orleans. It's like 8 or 10 feet below sea level. Well, his country is 30 feet below sea level.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man.
And yeah, you told me when you was over here,
they could solve these problems.
You told me when you was over there that place is beautiful because they don't even throw their trash in the doggone...
in the streets like they do here. No, I mean,
how much trash have you seen since you've been over visiting with us on the side of the road?
Nowhere near as much as over here.
Nowhere near. Over here? Oh, God. I was there 3 weeks and 3 days. In that time period, I saw one plastic bag on the side of the road, and where we went, we came back the same way 2 hours later, and it was gone.
Well, Thomas pointed out a use for plastic bags, for plastic bottles, and so...
Yeah.
And none of that stuff would ever get wasted in the perfect system, you know. This is the whole key of having all these minds sitting there thinking things like that. But if you have a community that has all these problems, and you got an empty building or a vacant lot for that matter, and you want to solve these problems, what better way to protect your free thinkers is to give them a place to go to solve those problems.
A lot of little towns in the United States they'll have a river that gets polluted, a lot of trash gets dumped in, and they have these so-called tubing deals where one weekend every year everybody gets an inner tube and they float down the river and they drink their beer and have fun and talk and carry on, and they pick up all this trash. Well, the thing is, they're cleaning up the river. But what do they do with the trash? Every time they take it to a landfill? No! Figure something out what to do with it. Extend this fun time of cleaning up. Extend it. Let's see, what can we do with this? What can we do with that? You know, you got old tires. Bolt them together and make a reef in your lake to stop waves from washing the shore away, and give us a breeding fish place to breed and raise their young.
Yeah.
I mean, we do that in Louisville, Texas. A lot of our boat docks and stuff like that, they actually take tires and bolt them together with cables and so forth and make a reef around the boat dock area, you know, the marinas, and to keep boats from running down and the waves from coming in and washing out the shoreline.
Well, there's
so many things you can do with just pure trash.
There isn't any resource out there, including old tires, which you'll find people, they want to give these tires away hand over fist because they can't get rid of them.
Right.
They keep piling up. And one company decided that they were going to grind all these tires up and mix it with the asphalt to build the streets. And right. so they profited from it because it, you know, it's free material.
Right.
Other people decided to make earth homes with them, you know, fill them up with dirt and build a house out of the doggone deal. I put some around my pond out there to keep the pond from silting in so quick. I could actually, you know, put dirt down in there and, you know, keep that pond bank from
eroding in. You know, a lot of people don't realize there's 3 quarts of oil in each regular size automobile tire. So how many quarts of oil are in a Mack truck?
Well, there's another key right there. There's another reason why we ain't never going to run out of crude oil. I don't care. People can argue till they're blue in the face that we're ever going to run out of crude oil. It's not physically possible. Right. It's I don't care if you pump it all out of the ground today. There's wells in Texas that went completely dry.
Yeah.
And they abandoned them because they were dry. Years later, they come back and the doggone well's full again. How's right. that happen?
Got me, but yeah. it does. I'm
well,
not know that.
As long as nature's doing what nature does and taking all this biological waste between the heat and the chemistry and everything that goes into how crude oil was designed to begin with, you're never going to run out of plastic. Nope. You're never going to run out of crude oil. You ain't going to run out of water. It's not physically possible. Water is the most stable molecule on the earth, and right. so you can crack it, you can ignite it, and you can do all kinds of stuff to it, but when it's all said and done, water's going to be water when it's done.
Right.
It might yeah. be dirty water because it's got, like,
contaminants.
What yeah, that term you used earlier where it was dissolved into water, Thomas?
You just
said it dissolved. Yeah, okay, so it's all, he had a better term than I had, but it's all basically dissolved in the water. We can filter that stuff out as well, but nonetheless, the water's still there.
And there's minerals and chemicals in that you filter out that's usable.
And everything, aluminum, iron, it all will deteriorate back into its natural stuff again.
Right.
You know, iron ore, whatever. So nothing gets wasted in nature's system. It's us that keep wasting stuff, and we get these thousands of landfills. I saw these, there's one place that they are actually begging people to bring their trash to.
Really?
They figured out a way to recycle it, and that's their economy. They are able to, you know, use it for fuels and materials and resources.
I'll
have to look it up. I had a link to it, but these people were begging people to bring us your trash.
Right.
You know? We'll use it. But that's the whole thing. Some cultures out there have actually figured out how to recycle like nature recycles, because there's nothing that man has ever made that nature can't break down.
Right.
All right? It don't matter. I've heard people tell scary stories about how plastic will fill the landfills and be
right.
there for thousands yeah. of years.
Right.
Well, I go out metal detecting, and when I find old bread wrappers that just crumble into dust after,
right.
you know, and you know that bread wrapper can't be more than, what, 20, 30 years old.
Right.
It's already biodegrading back into its natural state. And aluminum that turns into, what's aluminum? Calcium carbonate, is that the right one?
Aluminum oxide?
Yeah,
aluminum
well,
nitrate.
Gets all white and powdery.
Right.
I can't remember what the actual...
That's probably aluminum oxide.
Yeah, but it actually turns back into what would have naturally been
oxide.
In nature.
Oxide.
Right. Yeah. And so, and that don't take very long.
No.
You know, the chemistry of the dirt itself is enough to start that process, and you know, oxidization speeds it up, and you know, every
that's not going to happen from it just laying in the dirt. There has to be some alkalinity or acidity caused by either lightning or the plants and animals.
Well, yeah, but the rain,
it'll last forever.
That's a fact.
Because of the passive oxide layer.
When the rain, all the runoff from the streets and the farmers and all that, and dripping right. down the bottom of your deal, mixes with the water and goes down and saturates that ground. As long as that ground is moist, you've got some sort
right.
of deterioration.
Well, it doesn't matter which way it goes, because aluminum is amphiphoric, so it will both right. dissolve in alkaline yeah. substances and in acidic substances.
Yeah. We were talking about ashes from burning wood is turning into fertilizer and all. But the EPA, if they catch you, even out here in the country, change the oil in your car, use that oil, that used motor oil, and pour it along your fence line to kill the grass, it's a 20 years in prison, federal penitentiary, and $100,000 fine.
Wait a minute.
For fertilizing your pen site.
That's why you need to get rid of the doggone EPA. They're the ones that busted the hole in the doggone mine and pumped all that mine crud down into the creek and told everybody, oh, don't worry, just wait for the crud to float by and then you can drink the water.
My point is, if you want to kill grass along your fence line and punish yourself, not the EPA,
diesel fuel. For
you, no, you just go buy some fertilizer. Buy some 10-10-10 fertilizer and throw about 50 pounds every 100 feet, about 6 inches wide, and it'll kill all the grass. But next year, the grass is going to grow faster.
Right, it'll dilute, and then the stuff, it'll be low enough.
And the same thing with the motor oil. If you take motor oil and water and mix 2 to 3 parts water and then put some dishwashing liquid so it'll emulsify the water and spray it on your garden on the ground in the fall, and then next spring, plow your ground up, plant your garden. You just fertilize your ground.
Well, your soap oil, you're talking about has
crude oil is organic.
Right.
Well, in reality,
and it doesn't stay in the state it's at.
Everything it out there is organic.
It breaks down.
When I was in high school, eons ago, okay, the Egyptians, because they had more oil than they could sell, went outside the cities and they sprayed crude oil on the desert to lock the sand down so the wind wouldn't blow it into the city. 5 years later, they had weeds growing everywhere because they fertilized the desert with crude oil. Come on, man.
They must have done something to lock down the moisture, too.
Yeah, because the
reason it was sand and not plants because it was too dry.
But, I mean, that's...
Well, and you're definitely never going to run out of glass.
No. Oh, Lord, no. No.
There's sand everywhere.
Yep.
So if you ever need glass, well, there you go. If you understand basic science, there you got. All you got to do is...
Most of the geological minerals, too, have silica in it, which is the building block for glass. All you need is silica and oxygen. You want a different type of glass, and you start adding contaminants to lower the melting point, change the way it expands and contracts, the color of it.
There's more than 3,000 different compositions of glass.
Right.
More than 3,000. That's a low guess.
And one of the most expensive ones is just the silicon and oxygen because it's so hard to work with.
Right.
But it makes such a durable product.
Right.
You've seen a quartz crystal that's clear. Mm. They make labware, cups, glasses, plates, sheets to go in windows out of that same stuff by melting that quartz until it flows and then make a shape.
Where do you think the mindset comes from that we're ever going to run out of anything on this planet?
You can't run out. You can't create it. You can't destroy it. You can only change its form.
Yeah, all we do is change the chemistry. When you burn something, you just change the chemistry.
Exactly.
That's all you did. You know?
And it becomes fertilizer. More trees grow and eat the fertilizer and grow more trees. I mean, you know.
And if you paid attention in basic science and actually paid attention to what we kind of said here, you know, on the Knights of the Round Table and even Mad Science, and you got ideas now in your mind of what you can do with what otherwise would have been trash. Now, if those farmers would listen and actually, incorporate what I just explained about the duckweed, their fuel cost goes down, their fertilizing cost goes down. Their livestock feed goes down, and there's 3 pluses out of 1 negative that they inadvertently caused for me, but because they did that, and I understand what's going on there, I can monopolize and start me a business selling fish food, biodiesel, and, you know, have
and
a fertilizer,
and
grow fish at the same exact time.
Right.
So... let's turn what he did to me by accident into a positive. Do you realize how many golf courses are out there spend thousands of dollars going out paying people to put herbicides in their ponds so that their golf course will stay pretty?
Right.
Now, why would the golf course put thousands of dollars out there to do that if they realize that they could get that doggone pond to pay for itself?
Yes, absolutely.
That's the whole thing. If people are greedy and they want to make money... we show you how to make money just recycling. There won't be no trash left.
Right.
Like the example you made about the doggone the deposit deal. back in those days when there was a return for deposit sign on that bottle, you couldn't find those bottles anywhere.
Right, right. Because even the rich people that threw the bottle away, the poor kids, me and my friends, would walk up and down the side of the road picking up soda pop bottles so we could buy a Hershey candy bar for 3 cents.
And we went out, we picked up the lead weights that flung off people's tires and took them down to the bait shop, got the doggone money from got the bait shop for the weight of the lead, then went right across to the feed store, the candy section, and bought a bunch of candy and stuff. And all we had to do was walk down the road.
Right.
We were going that way anyway.
Right.
Exactly. So, and then when you go looking for stuff like that, you can't find it because everybody's doing it. When somebody finally realizes that you're getting paid to do this, you ain't gonna find it anymore.
Right.
That's the whole thing. And so, you know, if the governments out there are really interested in serving the people, they should be protecting ideas and people,
right,
problem solvers. That's the whole deal. And to do that, you need to give those problem solvers a place to go. There's probably a lot of brilliant people that are sleeping under bridges right now. They just gave up on society and just said to heck with it. But if you give them some sort of light at the end of the tunnel saying, hey, you know, I was noticing you was making these really cool little things out of trash there.
Right.
Would you want to come over here and see what you can do in this lab?
Right.
You see what I mean?
Exactly.
You give them a purpose in life and you won't see people, you know, living like that anymore.
Exactly.
Instead of trying to throw them in jail because they're homeless and sleeping on the sidewalk or a park bench.
There's some people out there that no matter what you do, they're not going to want to.
Well, I'm
but
sure.
There are a lot of them out there that would love to have a purpose in life.
And there's some people that would rather sit around and complain as opposed to doing anything.
With their sign that they paid $5 for.
And that's the reason why I didn't want to turn today's show into an open debate about science or politics or religion or anything like that, because that opens the gate to take this message away from where we want to go with
exactly.
it, which is the actual solutions
to the problem.
To the problem. We keep saying there's solutions,
and
you can sit around and point fingers at everybody and his brother. Do I trust my government? No, because their track record stinks. But that doesn't mean that I think that the government's the solution, because I'm going to lobby the government with my wooden stick and paper sign saying save the trees, and they're going to put a regulation on the people saying that you can no longer cut down trees or burn firewood. Now the people who don't have, you know, a regular stove are going to freeze during the wintertime, and my little action there just provoked the government to force these people to freeze to death.
Right.
Instead, I should have been over there teaching my government how, you know, we could use these resources efficiently and showing people how to do that.
Lower your sign and bring it with you.
Yeah.
Well, you see, the government is one of the most efficient means of wasting resources on the planet.
Right.
Oh, it's also the most efficient means of harvesting the most abundant resource in the universe that's close to the Earth, which is stupidity.
Yeah. If we could bottle stupidity and use it to power our nuclear power plants, we'd have proof of free energy. That would be over unity, quite literally.
We make $1 billion for 3 blocks of Washington, D.C.
that would literally defy the known laws of physics.
Yeah.
We need to tell these people who keep looking for a way to make it somebody else's problem whenever they don't want to do something about it to stop being irresponsible.
Yep.
And voting. And start going out there and being responsible. And if you're going to vote with your actions.
Road.
Yep.
You want the roads better? Go fix some potholes.
That's right.
Right.
Follow Domino's. Was it Domino's? I don't know if it was Domino's or another pizza place, but they actually invested into fixing potholes and stuff like that. There's a pizza company that delivers pizza.
Oh.
Because the government was not getting onto it and handling the pothole problem fast enough.
That's cool.
Well, when it all boils down to it, if you actually look at who's actually doing the work, it is actually the people. You know,
yes.
You're getting paid for your service, granted. But the ones who are the creativity, the ones who are the problem solvers in all the companies out there are the people. They hire you because you're brilliant.
Right.
Now, why don't you hire each other?
Right.
That's the deal. If you want to recruit the brilliant minds, you give them something to what's the incentive to want to do something like that?
Right.
I mean, a building, that's going to be sitting around abandoning, and then the city's actually going to have to take funds from the taxpayers in order to tear the building down, and now you got a vacant lot. Well, the vacant lot's going to need tending to, otherwise it's going to be a jungle.
Right.
So either turn it into a garden,
right,
you know, or turn the doggone thing into a structure that will benefit the community by inspiring kids like Jermaine to come out of school and come over and show other kids that are coming up in grades, look, hey, this is what you can do with this type of science over here.
There's been a lot of kids out there.
These different like types Jermaine. Of material. Yeah.
All they need is a little bit of encouragement, yeah?
If you get these kids involved in VM, they'll go to this place and create stuff. You know, years ago when I was a kid, they had these clubs they called boys' clubs.
Right,
and that got kids off the street, hoodlums off the street, because they go there. They had a place to play basketball. They had a craft section, and they had everything, you know, that would keep the kid from being bored, quite literally.
Right.
And you know, am I saying it's a perfect system? No, it wasn't perfect, but it was an option that kept people, you know, being able to have something to do instead of going out and getting into trouble. You know, when they got off of school, they'd, you know, go with their friends up to the boys' club and shoot some pool or whatever like that, and it kept them out of trouble. They weren't out breaking into people's houses and doing, right, you know, stupid stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how you do it, man.
Well, you know, actually, let's give the girls credit, too, because there were girls' clubs,
yeah,
that they taught young girls the responsibilities of being a good adult, you know? So, now we need more of those clubs, really do.
Well, the options are available when we're ready to use them, that's what I'm saying. So, protecting the problem solvers. Eventually, the way the system's going right now, the problem solvers are going to disappear.
Right.
Because at the rate we're going, the world is deteriorating and going crazy. I mean, I'm trying to pick out an example that isn't going to start a political debate or be...
That's hard to do nowadays. Really.
It's not a matter of picking something that won't start a political aspect. It's a matter of everybody else resisting... venting their politics about that.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're not about politics.
But that's just it, though. That's just it.
That's not what we're
it's
trying
a government
to
problem. We just need to do away with the politics completely by doing away with government, as in central planning, and go to personal government. You personally take responsibility and create value for the world, and other people decide whether they want it or not.
Yeah.
You don't need anything more than that.
Well, I think that if people took an initiative like we were talking about and actually started these communities or these buildings or even a piece of land where people can go and research, you know, farming or whatever, you know, and, you know, show people. When people come by and they ask you what you guys doing over here, you know, well, look, we're growing fish, food, and we're growing, plants. All in this one section, and you know, this is something that ain't new, but they call it aquaponics, and you got hydroponics, and this is how you can able to get more in a little section, and it's basically mimicking nature, doing what nature does, you know. The fish, they do their business in the water, which turns out to be fertilizer for the plants. The plants filter the water through the rocks and all that kind of stuff, and it comes back down. It keeps the fish tank clean. It keeps the environment. It's got a little structure. But in the process, you've got food, two different types of food. You got fish and vegetables, and you got a self-contained system.
What?
So, you know,
the thing is, the type of plants like you're talking about that you plant, either algae, duckweed, what's that other one you named?
Watermill.
All these things have vegetable oil in them, which... everybody says diesel fuel. Okay. Well, duh. What about fuel for your house to cook with?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it burns clean. Smells like cooking bacon when you burn it. You could actually use it to cook your food. You could use it to keep your house warm in the winter. So, I mean, or you can use it to run your tractor or your truck or your car back and forth to work, whatever. So the benefits are astronomical. I mean, it only takes somebody just sitting down and taking two sips off a glass of iced tea or a cup of coffee and thinking, and you come up with more ideas than I could possibly come up with.
There was a company, I think still out there, that they said something in their advertisement about, we don't build things, we make things that exist better.
Right. There you go. I love that.
So they're talking about, you know, you got a product that you're already selling anyway. They're not going to make nothing new. They're just going to take what product you got and improve on it. They make it better. And if you think about what we're saying there, that's brilliance.
Yeah.
They monopolized on brilliance to the extent where they don't even have to invent new stuff.
Right.
They just take this product and they use physics and science to build that, make that product better, find all its weaknesses and make it, you know, where it'll last longer or be more efficient.
Or unless you're like Lee Iacocca, where your job, your whole job is to redesign stuff so it will not last longer.
Well, yeah, that's a planned obsolescence thing, but even that, there's people out there that know how.
Hey.
Yeah?
Don't tell me that people aren't asking for that, though, because you were asking for a biologically decomposable plastic.
Yeah.
That is planned obsolescence.
Well, I don't necessarily think we need it.
It just depends on what the obsolescence is for, and is everybody okay with the obsolescence, or are you hiding it by, like, say, hiding water traps inside of the car body so it will rust and then you have to replace it?
Right. They deliberately do that, man.
Just if it's a profit motivated, or if it's just a common sense motivated, that would be the difference. Common sense says you don't want
this. Is it benefiting the people that you're building the planned obsolescence into, or is it actually a negative effect because you're going to keep them on the treadmill running harder to earn that money without their help getting any benefit from it?
Yeah. Well, there you go. So it's not like we're at a shortage of ideas.
Nope.
It's not like we're at a shortage of resources. Individually, we're probably short of resources. I don't have some tools that you got, but together we make a stronger toolbox.
It's not having the resources, it's not being local to have access to them.
Well, that too.
But the resources are there. We just don't have access to them because we don't have access to the transportation or whatever to go get them.
Yeah, so
everything you can buy is most likely because somebody trucked it in from somewhere else for you.
Yeah.
And they're putting a profit on top of that. But if you're willing to go get it yourself, you can get it at the cost of transporting and free from the environment.
Yeah.
Somewhere there's someone that has an excess of it that wants it gone, no matter what it is.
That's the whole thing.
An example of this, there was a exotic or an imported furniture company that sold furniture on Cherry Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that they got the furniture in on pallets from other countries where there was a surplus of what we consider exotic wood. So they were making their pallets out of bakote, cocoboa, ebony, and mahogany. These places were setting those boards built into a pallet when they got done pulling their expensive furniture, their handcrafted furniture off of it and putting it on their showroom floor out behind the place for the trash man to haul off.
Right. Exotic wood.
Right, we're not talking about just some nappy, splintery oak. We're talking literally hardwoods that are really super dense, heavy. If you sand them down with 1600 grit sandpaper, it looks like glass and it maintains that surface for a really long time because it's just that dense. Grains that you wouldn't believe running through them.
Yep.
Well, I know that Muddy built him a pallet shed, and he's living in it.
Yeah.
So, hey, it's recycled, man, and I'll tell you what, those pallet boards are pretty doggone strong. You ever try to break one of them boards?
Oh, Lord, yeah.
Man, you stomp on it, you'll bounce through the ceiling.
Yep.
Might even break your leg in the process or something.
Be careful hitting one with a hammer. It'll bounce back and hit you in the forehead.
Pretty good wood, but it's just knowledge like that. The strongest wood that I can think around, I was telling Jermaine just yesterday when we were walking through the property and showing him those hedge apples. Those things are obnoxious.
Right.
There are people that literally load their trucks up every year, and they will take them down and give them to this one company because this company has said that I'll take as many of these as you'll bring me.
Really?
Yeah, what they're doing is they're taking the seeds out of this, and there's a certain type of oil that's in the doggone seed that they're making beauty products out of, and they're making beauty off of it.
That is fantastic.
Also, if you ever picked up one of those things, they're sticky as all get.
Right.
Well, there are materials inside there that bugs hate.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
You're right.
So, for pest control, people will cut these things in half and they'll stick them underneath their house, and bugs don't want to go anywhere in there because they don't like it. But there's also, other things. I turned one of those hedge apples into a battery.
All right.
Well, when it comes down to the actual wood itself, when that wood is just like fresh off the tree, it's really super flexible and it's really strong.
Right.
So, you can think of all kinds of ideas you could make out of it. But when that wood starts to, what they call, get seasoned.
Cure like out. Seasoned. Yeah. Cured.
It changes. Its structure gets even stronger. And by the time...
It's about the second most dense wood in North American cotton.
Yep.
In fact, it's a favorite of all of your Native Americans for making bows and arrows.
Well, they around here, I guess they call it Missouri orange. Whenever they when they do this wood, and it's so beautiful. A lot of people making knife handles and stuff like that. So that handle on that knife will probably outlast the knife itself.
Yeah.
The metal will rust away, and that handle will probably still be there. This stuff almost petrifies itself because. When you wait till that finally gets completely hard, it's hard to even saw through that. I went through like 5 or 6 chainsaw blades just trying to take down one tree that had fell down because it's like concrete when it's all done.
Yep. So if you want to drive a nail in it, you got to drill a hole first.
So you got wood right there that if you actually built houses out of that, I mean, my God, that house would be the sturdiest house on the planet.
Well, the thing is, the wood is so dense, but bacteria won't even touch bacteria will not eat it. So you can put it on the ground and it'll last for years.
It's amazing how long, if you look at the difference of like if an oak tree falls down next to a old, 9 times out of 10, unless the wind blows it over and pulls the roots out, that even a dead hedge apple tree, it'll still be standing. And mulberries will grow right up through it.
Right.
Mulberry trees.
Uh-huh.
So it is still providing a service even after it's gone. But the tree that's laying on the ground, the oak tree, it'll be all rotted and picked up. It'll crumble. The other one will be like rocks.
Yeah. up in the mountains in Allegheny and Smoky Mountains on the east coast, or on the east side of the United States, they have a tree called locust. That is the most densest tree on North America. They have
locusts out here.
Yeah, they
honey locusts.
Yeah, they have found old plantations that the fence posts were made of locusts. They're still just as good a shape as they were put in around 150 years ago.
Yeah, some of them fence posts that I pulled out of here, you would think you could just run up there and break them off because they'd be rotted because they were underground. These things are just as good as they were.
So dense, so thick, so heavy, so hard, bacteria in the dirt won't even eat it.
But those doggone hedge balls, there's also all kinds of things that you could actually make out of, including biofuel. Mm-hmm. And so... what would have normally been obnoxious, that entire tree is amazing in itself because it's producing so many different possible products. People actually imported those things to make hedgerows. They plant them down along their fence line, and you get this big old huge hedgerow. You don't even have to pay for a fence anymore because they'll literally build a wall on your property. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we got so many hedge apples around here, because it also helps for keeping your ground from eroding away in spots where you want to keep
the root system.
Yeah, it's an amazing plant.
In England, they also make fences out of a certain type of tree. It might be willow, but they're called live fences. And what they do is they plant them in a row, and when they're grown enough, tall enough, they cut part, most of the tree branch off, still attached to the trunk itself, and then weave them together.
Oh, wow.
And then they grow up again, and when they're big enough, they weave and again cut them, and then weave them. not cut them all the way, but you know, just enough so that they still get the nutrients, and they just make it the best fence ever.
That'd be brilliant.
Yes, it would. Living fence.
We use those little evergreens. I love evergreens because if you want to build a beautiful row, you plant them.
Yeah.
You're gonna have to plant them several feet apart because they'll grow huge. But when it's all said and done, you'll have quite literally a wall of evergreens.
Right.
There's a house not too far, probably about 10 or 15 miles away from here right now, where they have actually put it around their entire property line. When you drive by, you can't see the house until you get to the driveway.
Right.
It's pretty cool.
I like it.
But just things like that, man, these ideas, there's so many of them. And if the governments of the world and the people of the world, mostly the people, I keep saying the government because they're supposedly there to represent you.
Right.
And if they really want to resolve things, their way of resolving it is either take more money from you or make another law.
Right.
That's it. That's how they do it. Right. They don't actually go out there and you know, clean up your ponds. They'll punish you for not doing it. So if you're going to get punished for not cleaning up the deal and have to pay a fine, why would you deliberately lobby someone who's going to punish you for doing what you...
Yeah.
It would have been easier for you just to do it. Don't even ask the man or the company to do it for you, because they're not going to do it for you. They're going to make a law,
right,
and they're going to punish you if you break the law. That's it. That's all they do.
Well, that's not what they do with, like, the grass laws. What they do is they basically tell you, look, if you don't cut your grass, we're going to send one of our guys out there, and we're going to charge you our rate.
Right.
And it is a punishment, because it's going to be a lot more expensive than paying the kid down the street to come by and mow.
Got to pay the kid down the street.
Yep.
But the whole thing is, I've actually thrown down the gauntlet on the Knights of the Round Table. I don't know how many times I've invited scientists to come out here. I've invited environmental groups to come out here. I don't care. If you know an environmental group out there and they're into, you know, environmental activism and they're protesting and all this kind of stuff, I would come out here and sit down and listen to a show of Mad Science or the Knights of the Round Table for a while.
And let them bring their science.
Yeah, bring their science
with
them.
Leave their science with them to make something useful.
That's the whole thing. You got all this resource of people, and you got enough, you basically got an army to go out there and protest the government to steal away your rights, that you keep hollering that the government's always stealing away your rights, but yet you want to try to do the same thing to somebody else by forcing them to do your bidding.
Right.
You just basically didn't accomplish anything but getting more laws on the books.
Right.
When in reality, that same sign that you got in your hand, if you got 1,000 people there holding the same doggone sign, you got resources available to you that you can go out and get things resolved.
Yeah.
You know? When you plant your plants out there, some people use those sticks to hold up the tree so that when the wind blows, that little baby tree can survive, you know?
Right. And here's some idiots taking that little stick that could save that tree and putting a sign on it.
Yeah.
Doug, carry your sign out in the woods.
Well, it's a hypocrisy in my mind, a wooden stick and a paper sign saying save the trees.
Right, there you go. Lord.
Oh, you're going to go out and get your coon skin hat and say, save the raccoons?
Right. Yeah, there you go.
With a logo on it?
No, you have to make a sign out of the coon skin that says save the raccoons.
Right.
Barry wants to join in. Let's see if I can get him in here.
Who?
Barry. Oh. I got to see if I can even find him.
No negativity.
Yeah, we're on a positive roll today.
Yeah.
No new negativities.
All right, well, I'm trying to start a call, but I can't.
All about positive here.
Let's try to send a message deal.
We are not corrupt.
Uh-oh, we got Ted now.
I didn't see that about him.
How you doing, Ted?
Good, how you doing, Shaziz?
We're doing a good show today.
Why was he doing this?
Good.
All right, now I'm trying to find Barry.
I'm not a crook.
That's right.
So, anyway, basically what we're talking about Ted, and if I can get Barry up in here, if I can find him. Okay, add to the call. I think I added him.
The only thing Nixon did that any other president did not do, he got caught.
All right, now I got him. Okay.
That's the only thing he did.
So anyway,
the others didn't do.
We started off, Ted, talking about, I don't know if you've been listening in, protecting the problem solvers of the world. The problem solvers like, you know, your dream team and your local deal. And we came up with all kinds of ideas and solutions on how to do everything but keep people from buzzing on the show live. Hi, Barry, you there?
How you doing there, Shazbooth? I'm kind of a stranger around here. I haven't been around for a while, but out in the bush hiding.
Oh, cool. Well, don't hide too long. We're bringing the problem solvers to the table. So anyway, back to what I was saying is, you know, I think the education system has pretty much, dropped the ball as far as promoting people to be free thinkers and get out there and think outside the box. You know, take the education you've been given, your science and all that kind of stuff, and expand on it with, you know, observations to make things better. But those folks, like the ones you hear on these shows all the time, are, you know, basically becoming extinct because of the way society is going. And we're trying to figure out methods by which you can, instead of, like, for example, we talked about if you got a building in your old, in your neighborhood, and the town council ain't got nothing to do with that doggone thing, they can't figure out how, instead of having to tear it down, they should gather up all the brilliant minds and turn this into a plus to make a place for the thinkers to go there and solve problems. Does that make any sense to you?
You asking me, Shazbooth?
I'm asking either one of you. Whoever, don't jump to the microphone at once. I want nobody to chip the tooth.
The thing is, if you started off, what you want to do is solve the problems of your neighborhood first.
Yeah, neighborhood at a time. You build your dream team in your neighborhood. You look at all the problems that you got. You find the resources available, including trash. Trash is a major resource where most people would think it's a bad thing. It's a plus because we've explained all kinds of things that could be made out of trash and recycled, and you could turn what would have been a negative into a positive. That's the whole point of today's show, is to turn all the negatives into positives of what you can do, and showing people by example in your community how to do that in theirs to make theirs better. Does that make any more sense?
It makes a lot of sense. But unfortunately, our society now is actually clamping down on any efforts like that by communities to become self-sufficient. We see it all over the place where communities are actually starting to do things for themselves, and of course the local city council will come up with some kind of regulation to shut it down.
Well, that's the whole thing.
That's the thing we're fighting right now.
We're taking around. We're not even going to the city council and asking them for permission, and we're putting the city council in their place because we're showing them we the people have solutions to problems out there. We're taking our problem solvers and putting them out there, so they ain't got no reason to sit around and complain because there's too much trash on the south side of town. That if you took these people right here who are willing to take that trash and to turn it into a plus, you ain't got no beef with the people anymore.
We'll find a beef.
And we'll find a way to vote them out.
That's your job, man.
We'll find a way to vote them out the next time around. We don't need you in there if you're not going to be a part of the solution. If you're going to be more of a problem than you are a solution, these folks, they want to fatten up their wallet. They want to get more power. They want to do all this kind of stuff, but they're doing it at the expense of the people. And the people are actually being the enablers to the alcoholics of power because they will keep them in office instead of pushing them out the door. You do a terrible job, you're no longer the dang mayor anymore. We're going to put a mayor in there that's going to look at all the problems we got, take all the resources, put it on the table and say, look, this is our assets. This is what we have available.
You know what works a lot faster than that?
What?
There is you have to look at the fact that nature, again, logic, physics, will actually solve your problem by the fact that if they start making laws against stuff, They will eventually make laws that will create loopholes in laws that they made before.
Right. Yeah. They always
and
do.
If you just have to be willing to sit down and read all the laws, find out what you're not allowed to do, and why you're not allowed to do it, before you can find a way to do the things you want to do that they can't change and stop you from doing because it will harm something they want.
Yeah.
Right.
So same thing applies to your taxes. Find every loophole you can and reinvest the money you've just proven that you don't have to give to the government back into your own life and your own community.
So there you go. Part of your dream team is the researchers, because there's a lot of people that I hear on Mad Science Show that says all the time, well, I really ain't got nothing to offer. But I say, well, you do have something to offer. You've studied science all your life without even realizing you're studying science, because you've observed nature, and now you know how to grow all these things, and you know medicines and stuff like that. And so the researchers out there have something to offer the dream team, because when we got something that we need to, know, heck, they can get out there, they can research the laws. This is what they say is illegal, but here's the 10 loopholes to that one deal.
You have several million listeners, and I'd be willing to bet money that there's not one out there that does not have something to contribute, something usable to contribute. I don't care who you are, how dumb you think you are, you know something that we could use.
Well, and these researchers got to eat, too.
Yeah.
So there's cooks out there.
Poor people got to eat. Rich people got to eat. Smart people got to eat. Dumb people got to eat.
But see, here's the thing, Barry. We've listened to, for years, all the different problems out there, and all the solutions are available. And most people are thinking that you can't get nothing done because you got all this government structure is going to hinder your way. Well, it's time for the people to stop allowing these governments to hinder their way. It's time for the people to come together in their communities and build these dream teams. Take and say to their government, look, since we're taxpayers, that means that is our building. And instead of you spending our money to tear that down, we're going to take all these brilliant minds and all these resources from the south side of town that it was just nothing but a trash pile, and we're going to use this building to find ways to solve that problem, to recycle every bit of that material and turn that into an income for people that need a job, and turn it into resources for the problems that need to be resolved in our community. That's how you get things done. Standing there with a wooden stick and a paper sign and complaining about the world being a terrible place, that ain't getting nothing done.
I don't know if this has anything at all to do with what we're talking about, but as Thomas said earlier, he said something about a little machine, and I've seen this. It's not a machine. It's just a little piece of wood with a blade in it, and you put a water bottle in it, and you turn it, and it cuts the water bottle into strips.
Yeah.
Well, think about it. If you cut that water bottle into eighth-inch strips, the water bottle's 2.5 inches in diameter. So you're talking roughly 6 or 7 inches around it. It's about 8 inches tall, or say 6 or 8 inches tall. An eighth of an inch, that's 8 circles per inch. 6 times 8 is 48. So times 6, you're talking 20-some feet of strip, eighth of an inch wide, out of one bottle. Now you take all these strips and you build a spot welder that will weld those strips together and make a net to go over your fruit trees.
Yeah.
Duh.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. We got
how many water bottles would you take out of trash and recycle them to a usable use?
The world said they had a trash problem. One place in the world said they wanted people's trash.
You're right.
And so that's what needs to be done. Folks out there that want this world to be better and they want to conserve on resources, it's available. Every bit of the science is there. Every bit of the solutions to all the problems. The only resource that we lack right now is the people. That's it. They're too busy doing whatever, or too busy complaining about whatever, too busy lobbying the government to resolve problems that the government can't resolve any other way than to tax you more and to put more restraint on you. So all they're going to do is wait for you to break the law that you just lobbied for, and they're going to take more money from you or throw you up in the jailhouse, which, now that all the jails are privatized, makes somebody else even more money.
And wait for it.
So the more you ask for the government, from the government, the more it costs the people. That's the whole thing.
I'd say, honestly, the easiest way to show anything showcase the inefficiency and the horror of central planning would be, say there's a storm that comes through and that winter's extra hard and everybody's freezing. That includes the mayor and the governor and the president. They're all freezing, so they tax you harder because their way of staying warm is to throw those tax dollars on the fireplace and burn it.
Yeah. Well, there you go, man.
And if that's not enough, then they put a fine on you for cutting down firewood so that they can get the money to throw on their fireplace and warm their place. And well, they confiscate your firewood and burn it, too.
Somebody said here a while back that whenever that they... Somebody's got some noise going on in the background. Can you guys mute your mic when you ain't using it or something? Alright, so somebody said that we had a climate issue that we had to resolve, and so we needed to find clean, renewable, alternative energy sources. And so people went out and they bought solar panels, and then the governments in those particular areas decided, well, we can't make no taxes off of this because they're not connected to the power grid, so you still have to be connected to the power grid, and we're going to fine you if you don't.
Right.
So they're punishing the ones that were the problem solvers of the problem that they said we had to begin with. So right. How do you protect those problem solvers who want to help the environment? And instead of allowing them to be able to be punished by the same system that they were, trying to resolve the problem for, the people need to stand together with those people. If you find a neighbor who's building solar panels, instead of being that guy who complains that it's making the neighborhood look ugly, be the guy that teaches them how to make it so that you don't even notice they're even there.
Right.
Make it beautiful. You see what I mean?
That's where Professor Dwayne comes in, because he is the artist.
Yeah. You know, they're making flexible solar panels now.
Yes.
And you could actually incorporate those solar panels, probably in a really nice looking way, into the structure of your building so that you wouldn't even know they were there.
Right.
They talk about in California that by a certain year that they want every house to be energy independent. How are they going to do that in the method by which they're doing it? Where if you try to get off the power grid, you're in trouble, right, unless you do it the way they want you to do it.
Well, the thing is, if you get off the power grid, if you follow the law and you get off the power grid, then they tax you on something that's yours. That they don't have to pay for. They don't have to pay for the electricity, the grid that they're selling you and taxing you for. Now they can just tax you for nothing, like they tax you for your land.
Well,
every 20 years of tax, duh, you've repaid for your land all over again.
Yeah.
I'm British Columbia.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to tell you, she lives in British Columbia now. BC Hydro has just made an announcement that they're no longer willing to buy excess power from people that are generating excess power via solar. Up till about 3 months ago, they would pay you for any money, anything that you put back into the system, they pay you 7 cents per kilowatt hour. They're no longer willing to do that because so many people now are starting to power their houses by solar. It's having a major impact on them. It's just another example of them shutting down or trying to shut down anything that's beneficial. But these new solar panels, there's a gentleman here in Terrace that just put them on the roof of his house. I had a talk with him the other day. Lives on Lowen Street here in Terrace, BC, and he covered his roof with solar panels, and he's producing way more power than he needs. And up to 3 months ago, he was feeding it back into the grid, and they were paying him. They're no longer willing to do that.
Well, here's an idea. Ship it over to his neighbor's house, and then have them ship it down to their neighbor's house.
And have his neighbor pay it.
Yeah.
Give it to my neighbor for free. But they'll stop that. They'll stop that, too, of course.
Well, here's the thing. Don't ask them about it.
Right.
Out of sight, out of mind.
The only way they find out is if somebody complains.
Hey, the only thing that's illegal in the entire world is what you get caught doing. Don't get caught.
Hey, here's another solution for that, too, though. How many electric cars are they trying to put out there?
Yeah.
And they need batteries for all of them. Turn that energy into a small processing, use it in a small processing plant in your garage to make a few batteries every month that you can sell into the electric car community.
Yep. Where there's a wheel, there's a way.
Refurbish.
If they don't want to pay you for it, don't give it to them. Take that system completely off the power grid and keep it yourself.
Right.
That's the whole thing.
Sell the electricity and batteries.
You know, here's the thing. People allow the governments to oppress them because of examples like what we said about whenever somebody wants to, you know, save the trees or whatever, you know, they'll get their wooden stick and paper sign and go lobby the government to make a law to make it illegal to cut down this particular species of tree. And so now you can't use this tree anymore. It's off the table as far as resources.
Make another sign to protest something.
You know what I mean?
They're lobbying the government's like pouring gas on a fire.
Well,
it's like you said earlier, Shaziz. Now, once they pass the law that you can't, you know, cut down these trees, right? Then you don't have paper to make signs that protest. So now all of a sudden you got to go out here and kill these raccoons and skin them to use their skins to make signs that don't kill the raccoons.
Well,
duh.
My grandfather years ago used to go up to the Independence Square and he'd play checkers with these old guys. And before he got there, he was kind of like an outsider. They were kind of like the government. And these were the best of the best checker players. I'll tell you what, they'd get out there and they'd play checkers with each other and they'd actually be sliding money under the table when they won or lost. Well, my grandfather steps up onto the scene, and so he's up against this governmental structure. You don't just come walking in and, you know, take over or nothing like that. So my grandpa patiently learned what was all going on. He's watching them, and then when he finally got his foot in the door to play a game of checkers, he started mopping them one right after another, just laying them down. And this made the government mad. They couldn't handle this. Here's this new guy. He's coming in there. He's beating every one of their best at checkers, and they tried and they tried and they tried, and they could not figure out what the heck he was doing. He ended up being the doggone checker champion of the whole deal. He was the one to beat.
Right.
But the whole key was, he didn't go in there and start telling everybody what to do or anything like that. He went in there. He became a better checker player than them by watching everything that they were doing and what they were doing wrong, and went in there and basically climbed to the top of that pyramid on that checkerboard. And I tell you what, yeah, they were not happy about it. To, you know, to be beat by some unknown that just shows up, and all he did there for a while was just stand around and observe. That's it. He got his moment to play. And the moment he had to play, he beat the first guy, and the second guy says, well, I can beat you, you know. And on down the line, he cleared them all out. There's probably 100 different checker players, and he just walked right through every single one of them. There wasn't one of them that could beat him, and they tried multiple times. And they even said, because he wasn't a gambler.
Right.
They even said, I'll bet you money on this deal. He said, well, if you want, I'll take your money, but you're going to lose.
Right.
And it wasn't because it was just because he was watching everything that they did, and every time these guys would make the same doggone mistakes over and over. If you want to win at a game of checkers or you want to win a game of chess, then you need to know the game.
Right.
And that's what the government is. It's a big game. If you don't know the game, then you're going to lose.
Exactly.
And if you play against the ones that do know the game, they know how to beat you.
Yeah.
That's when you're standing there with your wooden stick and paper sign. No, they'll let you protest. They'll even let you get rowdy, and then they'll send the thugs in to throw you in jail because they already know that when you go to jail, you're going to be paying them more money.
Right.
You're going to give them more power. And so, yeah, protest all you want. Yeah. All right. And then when you throw it out.
Reading and understanding law, too, is just a pattern game. So
yeah,
there is a process where when you're learning something, you get a saturation point, and then your head swims.
Yeah.
But each time that you keep doing it, if you keep going back to it, you can consume more and more and more and absorb more before your head starts swimming. So if you're having trouble understanding the vernacular of the law, stop, read a little each day until you hit that point where you can't read anymore, and just make a plan. Every day, I'm going to sit down and read a little bit about this law or read a little bit about that law until I can't handle it. And if it helps, pay attention to how long you can last, how much you're absorbing, how much you're reading each time, so you can see your progress until eventually it becomes second nature. You can sit down and read it like you're reading something you wrote.
Yeah. Well,
in your own language.
The good thing about our modern day technology is if you got researchers out there, you quite literally have research on demand. You got a question about a certain law and all the different case laws, there's somebody out there who probably already read it.
Right.
Or somebody knows the website to...
Or worse, you know, has lived it.
Yeah, has lived it. So, if the people out there understand that you've got more power than you think you do, then you'll stop telling yourself that everything is not, there's no hope. There's no way that we can fix any of this stuff. If we decide to come together and do things together, we'll get things done. We can fix stuff. There ain't no problem out there under the sun outside of bringing people together. If you can put those egos aside and you can do for the better of everybody just to listen, open your ears and listen to what somebody else is saying as a potential answer to a problem that you say exists, and we can resolve this issue.
Right.
And the pollution industry out there, we got all these companies that are out there polluting, and people go lobby the government to, who then in turn will put a carbon tax on them or whatever. That carbon tax ain't going to clean that soot. But somebody who knows about chemistry, somebody knows about engineering and mechanics and that kind of stuff right there can say, look, this is what you could do to this system right here to make it not smoke. Plain and simple. You get a better burn, you don't get no smoke. So there are people out there already on standby with the knowledge because they've years worth of research and paying attention to science and physics that understand how to resolve these problems. But you lobbying the government didn't do anything for you or that problem. All it did was throw another regulation on there to make you pay more money when it's all said and done, when you could have come over to these guys over here and they could have resolved the problem, and then you don't have no more reason to protest. But I think there are people out there who enjoy protesting. I actually
think
they're
talking about outrage mobs.
Yeah. Right. I actually think there are people out there who enjoy doom and gloom and negativity.
They're not just enjoying it, they're addicted to it.
Yeah.
Like addicted to buying shoes or something else like that, where they do it to an excess that it's harmful.
Yeah. And then a lot of people wonder why so many people are sad and depressed, because you look out there in the world and we talk about all these wars going on. First off, where is the problem? Where's the war coming from? What in the heck is happening that everybody thinks they got to fight for? Most generally, it's going to be resources. It's going to be some sort of ideology that people couldn't agree on, or it's going to be some sort of financial. Most generally, it's financial.
Most generally,
because somebody's making money every time you fight with your brothers and sisters.
I'm not sure what happened to them stop protesting back in the 60s over that war. It seemed like that generation was really making a jump, and then all of a sudden they kind of gave up. I kind of looked at it as, well, the interest rates went up real high and everybody got plenty of money and everybody stopped worrying about it or something.
But have you ever heard of a silent protest?
Well, I don't know.
All right, check this out. I was kind of mentioned this one time. Sort of, I'm probably not going to explain it the same way he did, but you got this thing that they've gave you called monopoly money, all right? Now, we all agree that the value of that money is like probably, you know, not what it should be as far as it's not backed by gold or silver. However, in that piece of paper is some power. You can determine which company you give that power to. When I hand a dollar to 7-Eleven, I just gave 7-Eleven some power. Alright? And the more people that come and hand 7-Eleven some power, the stronger 7-Eleven becomes. And so if I decide, well, wait a second, 7-Eleven, they're not the ones, they're over there supporting this doggone war going on by whatever means that they're doing it, I ain't giving 7-Eleven my dollar. I'm gonna go down there and get Quick Trip. But wait a second, Quick Trip's doing the same doggone thing. So then I'm going to go find somebody, because I need a certain product. I'm going to go find somebody who makes that certain product, and I'm going to do some research in what they do. And if they're not involved in supporting the effort that I don't like, I'm going to hand them my money.
There you go.
See? Or I'm going to go out and buy the products from somebody else, and I'll make the soda myself. You know how easy it is to make soda? They got machines out there now that you can make your CO2 and your syrup, and you got soda. Make your own flavors.
Yeah.
Well, most of the necessities of life, because they're a necessity, there is a collective of people that are competing to bring it to you so they can make some money off it, because there is so much of a use of it. Take gas, for example. How many different companies make and sell gasoline?
A lot.
So that silent protest is powerful.
Listen, if you want to protest against oil companies being involved in the military-industrial complex, well, you can literally say, okay, I'm going to pick one company, and as a group, we're all
here. Come in and say that a little louder, because this is good. Well, I'm going to give you my seat.
Well, you pick one company 1 week, and you protest against them. That way, you still have, let's say, there's five companies. You have four companies to buy your gas from to keep going and getting the necessity that you need, while you're able to starve one company to knuckle them under so that they will actually do the will of their consumer to get in your good graces. Then you switch to the next one. And instead of demanding a complete retraction, you do a partial with each one, making it progressively more and more clamped down to the goal you're going for until they're all doing what you want them to do in order to keep your business. What I actually coined this as the revolving boycott, where you rotate between multiple suppliers and you determine how long to boycott that person based on a criteria they have to provide you to get you to move on, stop boycotting them, and pick one of the other guys. This will go on until you get everything they can possibly give you until let me rephrase that. You'll know when you hit your saturation point where they are doing the most they can possibly do and there's no way they can stop doing or go give any more, because one of them will go out of business. One of them will claim bankruptcy and fail and be absorbed by the other companies. But those other companies will look at that and go, we never want to see that happen again.
Not to us, anyway.
If you tell us what you want, we will do everything in our power to do for the will of the people what we can. Because companies have evolved by manipulating government to create corporate law so that they can have even more power and more power and more power, such as the medical insurance industry now has the right, or has a law that where they can deny your claim no matter what, even if they know for a fact that they should be paying it, because you cannot penalize them from any harm that happens to you from them not paying in time when you win your claim. They just have to give you what they would have initially given you anyway, so they can sit on it in the bank while you struggle and suffer and lose your home or whatever and collect the interest off it. And when you finally win in court and you don't get any of those other things back because you don't have the money to replace them, they just give you what they were going to give you initially anyway, always one lump sum.
And they keep
what politician money. Put together the idea of putting a law to protect a corporation over the individual, the weak, soft, individual human, as opposed to this massive megalith of a corporation called the medical industry, from harm, from the harm that those that industry could create, all because, oh, those poor medical industry, insurance industries might not be able to provide the proper service.
No, I can tell you which politician.
Then they need to change their policies and straighten it up so that they actually succeed while still taking care of what they promised to do.
If the politicians at the insurance companies paid off to pass the law.
Exactly. Yeah, and this is why I said this is the evolution, though, that they have been going through that the individual has not. And we, as the people, have to evolve in some way to push back on this, or it will continue to crush us under until eventually that boot on your neck is not there to suppress you. It's there to crush you, to get the lifeblood out of you so they can make wine for the people at the top.
There you go.
So it won't matter right or left, because you aren't going to be around after they get done squeezing you for everything you've got.
Yep.
There's a solution.
There's always a solution. Every single problem.
And a side effect of all that, too, is that while you're doing that, you may very well be lowering the price to where it should be by forcing a cartel to break up and compete against each other naturally so that they're providing the best value they can for the lowest possible price without going out of business. They're still making the profit they need to keep going.
So let me pose a question. Four mad scientists in a duct tape and baling wire radio station come up with this many solutions. How many solutions do you think a nationwide effort, and even in your nation, and all over the world in general, how many mad scientists do you think are out there in them labs that already know a bunch of things that would be solutions? How much things do you think we could get accomplished?
A lot. If we could just get them all together.
Yeah.
Not necessarily get them together physically, but get them together, like on Skype or whatever, and get them all thinking the same thing.
Yeah, get them in your neighborhood,
Hold on. Don't discount it, because You can come up with all the ideas in the world, but those ideas are worthless if you don't use them.
Zero value. We already said that.
Yeah.
They have zero value unless you enact them, and the physical gathering of resources and people to help each other out, like in a communal place or somewhere outside of town where, like I said, the criteria is you need land that you can, for what we're talking about, land that there's no regulation that will stop you from bringing an older mobile home or something like that in and setting it up and making it habitable. Because there are people willing to give them away because they want them gone, so all you have to do is pay to have it hauled.
In every community,
pay for any materials you need to fix it up and put the elbow grease into fixing it up. There is a living domicile now, but those people, when they come to work at your research lab, which could be nothing more than a metal building with some insulation and electricity running to it and water running to it, that you can relax in the evening each night while you're on vacation for 2 weeks and get 2 weeks of research done.
Yep.
Instead of going to Hawaii and sitting around on the beach going, man, I really wish I could work on this idea or that idea while the family's running around acting like a nut, because that's what they're told they must do.
Right.
Instead, you can give them a chance to do something interesting or enjoyable there while you're vacationing there. Or you let them go to Hawaii and you go to the research facility.
Yep. Right. In every single community out there that I've ever been into my entire life, there is a vacant building somewhere. I could take you downtown Kansas City. There's probably 100 vacant buildings down there, just going to waste. And they become a burden to the city. The city can't do nothing with it. It's either supposedly to them uninhabitable or whatever, you know. But if you had the right people in the country or that city that really wanted to take that and turn it into a plus to show people what is possible, there are resources available. If there's 100 buildings down there and you can only make one good one out of those 100 buildings, just think what you just did.
Yeah.
You took something that was a complete and utter eyesore. You tore this building down, meticulously took it apart. I know this is possible because my grandfather built an entire house off of recycled materials. There were houses down in Kansas City that were either had a partial fire to them or got old, and he'd go through there and he picked out plumbing, he picked out electrical, and he took those houses apart piece by piece, sold off what he didn't need, gave away what he didn't need, and then turned around and built his entire house that a very large family was raised in. And he built it all out of recycled materials, never paid for very much other than maybe some nails and a hammer. But that's what you could do with those buildings. You could tear down the ones that ain't any good and take the materials that are still salvageable. There's a store chain out here that's called Restore in my area. And what they do is essentially that. They will go out and they will take down houses and they will take and... there's also another one called Habitat for Humanity where they'll recycle these old houses and take what they can use and help to repair other people's houses. But this particular store, they'll go out there, they'll take these good lamp fixtures, electrical things, anything that's still good, and they will sell them for a fraction of the price. So instead of you having to go to the hardware store and buying it for full price, you can go get a big roll of carpet that's good, you know, carpet for pennies on the dollar. So where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah, you're usually buying like recycled carpet from a living room and turning it into, say, a hallway carpet.
Yeah.
Because you know it'll fit because the hallway is much smaller than the living room.
But nonetheless, that's the kind of thinking that you need to promote in your communities by finding these people out there. I tell you, everywhere I go, I find people, and I'm looking at some of the things that they made repurposed out of recycled things, and I'm like telling them, you know, that's brilliant. Those are the folks you need to find and put on your dream team. You know, if you got a dream team in every single community out there that goes around, they sit in on these city council meetings and they listen to what's being said and all the problems that they say they got to try to resolve. And then when it's their time to speak, they say, hey, you know, I got a solution for that problem if you want to hear it. And they stand up and they tell them, this is how we can get rid of every single bit of trash that you want out of this neighborhood. And we can have actually turned it into, you know, jobs for those who need jobs. And resources for those who need resources, because in every single community, somebody doesn't have something in their house that they need. And there's an old house that they're trying to get rid of, It's got a good hot water heater in there. There is a plumber and electrician that can take that hot water heater over there and put it in that person's house, and so that brings their quality of life up, and you just use all the available resources in your community to solve that issue.
Right. And it'd be a lot cheaper just to pay the plumber and the electrician for their time without having to buy the hot water heater that they just wanted rid of, and they didn't, they were going to throw it away.
Yeah. And so, folks, look.
So it saves them some money.
For us to go ahead and stick with the mindset that we're helpless is ridiculous, because in your community you've got so many resources that it blow your doors off. And even if you got a neighboring community and they got resources that they're trying to get rid of, they don't want them. I mean, they got their things solved up. They need to get rid of them. You go down there and they'll give it to you. So by doing that, you show by example, these two neighborhoods have cooperated with each other. We had all these resources we didn't need it that they needed. We gave them to them. They solved their problems, and now you got two beautiful neighborhoods. And the next one in line looks over, hey, well, how you guys doing that? Well, this is what we're doing. We're cooperating.
Right.
You know?
Working together.
That's the whole deal. And you don't need the government for that. You keep your government in check by sitting there in the seat when it's time to go to the city council meetings or, you know, stuff like that. And whenever they say there's a problem, say, okay, instead of you putting this regulation on the people, how about you take this solution right here and we get it resolved?
Right. Spend the money that you would normally spend policing people over that law to promote that idea and get people involved that will actually want to do something with it and fix the problem.
There's people out there begging for jobs. They need a job. Well, the city itself could actually make a job. It wouldn't be like, you know, a full-time job or whatever where you go, like, to, let's say you're working at Walmart or something, and you got to be there every single day. It could be a hit-and-miss kind of job, but nonetheless, it's still money in somebody's pocket. You take this government, whatever, your town council money that they were going to put towards this problem and pay this person to go over there and clean up this vacant lot. Now you got this vacant lot prepared for whatever kind of project, a city park or even a city garden. You know, there's a lot of people in the city that might be hungry. You know, you got a community garden where you're growing the food. The people get around there and they feed each other. They go out there and work on it, and it builds pride up in the community, because I was part of that. I helped that make that beautiful garden or that park over there.
Right.
And you didn't have to ask the government for nothing other than to direct those funds that they were already going to direct towards taxing you or enforcing you to help pay somebody a living that, you know, the community is pitching in for the benefit of the community. Why wouldn't that community money go towards benefiting that person that needed a job?
You know, that points something out, too. Panhandlers.
Yeah.
You think, well, they don't have a job, the panhandling for money, or you got the mentality, well, a lot of, you won't give them any money because you know a lot of them can work and won't because they're getting more panhandling or because they're lazy or whatever. Instead of, initially I thought, well, you could, you know, shame the people who won't go and help out the community when the opportunity has arisen and they get something for it. Pride the people who do go do something.
Yes.
So that way when you go by, you know, hey, this guy,
down the one
while he's sitting here on the side of the road, it's because he doesn't have any money, but I mean any way to earn what he needs. But when we came to him as a community and asked for his help, he helped. We gave him sandwiches and a few dollars and whatnot to compensate him for his time. People who see that person there whenever they don't have something they can offer them to help are going to be much more likely to stop by and drop a few dollars in this deal.
Yes.
What if
go buy to McDonald's and pick them up a meal or a Subway and drop it off for them?
What if you were
stapled together from the store? Exactly.
What if you were a homeless person and you knew that if you were willing, because most homeless people, they do go around and do odd jobs for people. You know?
Right.
You knew that you could go to any city council, because this city council had a program going that if you decided you needed some work, you could go to city council and say, look, I'm down on my luck, You got anything on the board that needs to be resolved in this community? And they got a long list. Yeah, we got this old folks over here. They got a lawnmower, but they don't have nobody to push it.
Right.
You go over there, we'll pay you this amount of money to do this.
Right.
There you go, man. You just
you basically give them the list of, they give you the list of their qualifications, and you sort out all the jobs that they could possibly fit and say, pick the one you want.
Let them pick out the job that they want
to
do.
You have to do this job. This is not a gulag. This is just an opportunity.
Do you know how busy that town council would be? Because there's a lot of people that need jobs, and there's a lot of people that need to make extra money.
Right.
Yeah, I got a good job, but I'm kind of running low on funds. You got anything the community needs resolved?
Right.
There you go, right there.
Right.
You see, folks, what I just said earlier about we were sitting here doing a Knights of the Roundtable show. We got four mad scientists in the room. We've already thrown out tons and tons of solutions. And the only ones who can bring these solutions to the table of your town council meetings is you. The only one who could put your booty in the seat of the town council meeting is you. Yeah, you got to walk up here. You got to want to do this. They'd go in there and tell them, look, hey, there's a whole lot of ideas out here, a whole lot of solutions on how we can resolve all this. You ain't got no more homeless problem in your deal because these folks can afford to buy them a room in your new community that you just built.
Right.
So, you know.
There's enough houses, they wouldn't even have to do that. They could give them a house.
Yeah. These houses that they want to get rid of.
Right. Have them fix up all the houses that are dilapidated and then move into them.
Well, you know, it's like
deed it to them.
Barbara or, what's her name, Lily, lady, was telling me
Patty?
About those towns, little bitty towns in Kansas that they'll give you if you just set up something there.
Right.
And get it open town.
Well,
open.
This is the other thing,
why
too.
Why do that?
If you give them...
Work.
If you give them the houses that they came in and fixed up so that they weren't dilapidated anymore to live in, don't tax them on the property. Tax them on the income, because the less income they're making, the less wear and tear they're putting out on the populace, onto the roads and stuff like that.
Right.
So therefore they're paying for what they use now.
Not to mention the effort that they put into repairing that house. They walk in that house with pride because they did it.
Exactly.
And that's all these people want.
Well, you're going to see a lot of community gathering in those areas, too, because you're going to have a whole group of people going in fixing up, say, 8 or 10 properties
there.
They're all going to remember each other. They're all going to get together because they actually work together. Now they're going to form a lot of friendships and bonds that actually strengthen that community, because the networking is what makes a community strong. Not just gathering a whole bunch of people together. It's the ability to more easily access networking, larger not only brain trusts, but also work trusts, where people can work together, and skill sharing.
Right.
Well, I want to put a bold statement out there. The government ain't never been the problem. It's been the people is the problem.
Yeah.
Because you took and put the power in these people's hand and expected results. Well, if somebody's doing a job for you and they're not doing the job to the best of their ability, or even getting corrupt for that matter, then it's your obligation to get them out of office.
Exactly.
Yeah, but we need better tools for that.
Oh, sure.
It's too easy to hide things. And that's why I said, instead of allowing the government to spy on the populace, we need to flip the camera and we need to be watching constantly what the government's doing.
Oh, shit.
And hold them 100% accountable for everything they're doing.
Oh.
It doesn't matter if you're talking about the lady that issues the licenses for marriages down at your local town or the President of the United States. We need to have full access.
Yeah.
We need to know everything that they're doing so that we know when they're doing something wrong.
If they don't like it,
and
they can
resign. No, you can't do that.
Well, I say...
Hey, better yet, though. Don't just do it on a shame basis. Do it on a pride basis, too. If you like what they're doing, they have a GoFundMe. You can actually send them a few cents or a few dollars. And if the whole nation is giving money to, say, the president because of something fantastic he did that didn't really benefit him, and no corporation made any money, so he couldn't get any lobbying money, now there's a whole 300 million people dropping a few dollars in there, he's making more money off of every good deed he does
than he could possibly.
Right.
So you just
police officers stop doing the quota thing where you have to give so many tickets, and have every time they do something for people or for the community, they give them a survey they have to fill out, and they have to turn in so many surveys.
Right.
So you just
the amount they're pulling a cat out of the tree, or they're stopping a speeder, they do a survey.
You just did to the government what the government's been doing to the people all the time. They use their pawns, which is us. And we're the ones that that keep the kingdom together, because we're the ones that actually do
because
the work.
Because we keep subjecting ourselves to being pawns instead of being responsible for things and taking the power out of their hands by making their necessity no longer there.
So to try to sum this up in short, how do you protect the problem solvers of the world? Well, here's how you do it.
Come together and support them.
You recognize that you are a problem solver.
Right.
You personally are a problem solver. So in order for you to protect that problem solver, first you need to recognize that you are a problem solver. And then you find the other problem solvers in your neighborhood, and you gather them together, and you take all the ideas and every bit of resources and what's going on in your community.
You missed a step. Hold on. You gather those other people together, and you show them that they're the problem solver too, and therefore it is their problem to be protected.
Yeah.
So that they will collectively work to protect each other.
That's it. When your neighbor's in trouble, you stand with your neighbor. When your neighbor is doing something that the government said, like putting solar up, and then the government comes in to punish them, you stand with your neighbor.
No joke.
You put them up in your yard.
Right. You don't have to protect the problem solvers. If you point out that they need it and that they are a part of it, they'll protect themselves.
That's it.
They'll work together.
That's what it's all about.
They're problem solvers. Why wouldn't they solve the problem of being protected from not being able to solve problems?
That's right. When the government attacks me, I stand up for myself. When the bank took me down, I stood up for myself. I stood my ground, and I beat the bank.
And now your best give back to the community is to detail everything you did so other people can do the same.
That's it. To tell you how.
The weaker the bank gets, the weaker the government
gets. Every time I get on here and I try to tell you things about certain types, see, there's terminology out there in this world. First off, you got to understand the difference between the phrase residential property and private property. There's two distinct differences in there, and that is taxes or lack thereof. On private property, there's no tax system to tax private property. However, residential property, there is a definite and provable and long-lasting way to tax residential property. If you own private property here in the United States, and depending on which area you're in would determine on which laws are applicable or not, but if you own private property, the city will not pay for any upkeep on the roads. Because it's your road, it's private property. They will not pay for certain things. You got a different color street sign, and it is all private land, private road, and so your tax base is, you're not getting taxed because you're not accepting the services of the city. Yeah. So when you become a residential property, that means that now you, because you are receiving the services of the city, now you have to pay your taxes. So you got a school tax, you got firefighting tax, road taxes, and all these other taxes that are applicable on your tax bill every year because you've accepted the residential terminology. That's your label you got. You just made your property residential. So if you want to go out and buy a property that you're not going to get taxed by that particular city, then you need to buy a property and ensure that when you buy this property, you buy it as a private property, which means you're not going to accept nothing from the government, but you're not going to be also, you're not going to be punished by the government as well for owning that piece of property. That's the difference.
That's interesting to know. It really is.
Sure, that varies from state to state.
Well,
everybody
it does.
Everybody should talk to a lawyer, not accept any of this as legal
advice.
That's
right. These
are just suggestions to get them busy investigating.
That's one of the loopholes that governments will close up when they realize what's going on. And I know this for a fact personally because I've done this. I went to the city clerk's office and I asked them, I said, how would I go about having my land listed as private property? And the lady kind of looked at me cross-eyed because nobody's ever asked her that question. And the words came out of her mouth right after that was all the confirmation that I needed to know from what I already assumed was that she said, well, if we do that, we ain't got no way to tax you. And I said, oh, really? Thanks. See you later.
No joke.
There's no system in place to tax private property.
Well, you're talking about a temporary patch, too, though.
Yeah, but they'll find a loophole.
You know what the permanent solution is?
Huh?
Permanent solution is to make generate those solutions and the people enact them that eliminate the need for the tax money, and therefore you'll know when they come to knock on your door for taxes exactly what that money's for then, because they don't need it for you. So now it's all about them.
Yep. And here's one other thing too. Also, you got to learn about, like, I actually live in a town with the town's address, but I'm not actually a resident of the town. I'm just in the mailing address. So this particular town, and I know from a fact because I was actually sitting in on the particular meeting that was involved, there's a word called annexing, where a city, if there's land out there that has the mailing address, they can lobby the next city over to annex this property and make it part of the particular town, like, say, of Kingsville. So Kingsville won't annex this property without going around asking all the other surrounding lands,
like,
about it. And so
it's right next to Kingsville. And there's another Pauperville over there, and another Pauperville over there, because it takes a bunch of paupers to support a king.
Yeah, and so there's another portion of that, that if you want to start your own town, you have to then go out and lobby all the towns around there to see if they would be willing to annex you into their town before you can start your new town. All right, but here's the key. Kingsville will have the tax base of all the people with the mailing address, but they will not annex this extra land, because this means that they have to now be responsible for all the city benefits, roads and everything. And,
unless it will generate enough tax revenue for them to be able to support it.
Right.
And some extra to
line their
pockets.
If there's not enough people, they won't do it.
So I'm actually being taxed for a school tax in a town that I don't even physically live in, just because I have a mailing address of that. So there's another thing to
contemplate
on.
And you don't have your kids in school either.
With your private property, is that you never put a mailing address to your private property.
Huh.
Well, you know, there's another thing too. Preppers are all about, like, buying a piece of land out in the middle of nowhere so they can escape detection and whatnot.
Yep.
How hard is it for them to go down to the title deed office and find out where you're at and what land is owned by somebody?
Oh, they can find out, but if it's listed as private property,
they're not there, so they can just go down to the title deed office to find out what all else you own, and they come and find you.
Yeah.
Now you've got armed guards and tanks and Humvees outside your little prepper hideout because you bought the land and got a title deed for it.
Sure, but in the process of playing chess, you got to know the rules to the game. You got to know how to sucker them into coming after your pawn and getting them with a knight or a bishop or whatever. But so, if you're going to play the game that the government plays on you, you got to understand the rules of the government. First off, if you got an address to a particular piece of property, now you're attached to the government. If you got any city utilities on your private property, then you have basically given them access, because they have 20-foot easement from the outside of that utility. So if you want a truly self-contained land, you don't buy it as residential. You buy it as a private property, and you make sure there's no public utilities, no public nothing on that land, and then you keep it as your own and make it self-contained from that point. But since we're already stuck in the matrix, because we're already caught in the web, we are people, after all, and we had birth certificates before we even knew what they were, so we're already stuck in the mess. So now we need to know how to play the game of chess or the game of checkers like my grandfather, and we need to play it better than the ones that are out there playing it on us. They're getting rich, they're getting powerful, and they're getting the people to the point where the people are so depressed that they believe that there is no way that we can ever win this game. You can win the game if you know the rules. But if you don't know the rules, you just go in there and you get mobbed. And that's what happened. You go to court, you don't know the terminology. Before it's all said and done, you gave the judge jurisdiction and you gave them the authority to fine you or throw you in jail or whatever. Those are researches that you can go out there and look out here and you can find answers to. So in your dream team, you get a researcher. You get a bunch of researchers, more researchers. Researchers are probably your most valuable asset. And then you get the people with the talent, the raw talent, the people who can weld, the people who can do electronics and electricians and plumbing and you name it. Whatever it goes into building a structure, a house or a building or whatever, you gather those people up. Then all of you together, you go sit down in that city council meeting and you listen for the key word. Right? The key word out there, problem. The moment they say that there's a problem and this is what we need to do to resolve it, then you step up with the answers. You say, okay, well, that tax money you're getting ready to put into enforcement, why don't you put it into the solution and we'll get the job done. We're ready. That's how you're going to fix it. That's how you're going to protect the problem solvers of the world, is you're going to first realize that you are a problem solver, and then you're going to turn around and gather the other like-minded problem solvers of the world, and you're going to resolve these problems in your community, which is going to shine the light out to the next one, and they're going to want to know how you did what you just did and why you all are so profitable and your town looks beautiful. So with that said, we're down to the wire. And it's time to go around the table. Barry, you came in last. Everybody, you got some words of wisdom you want to sling around before we get out of here? Barry, you still there? I think we lost Barry. How about you, Ted?
I'm here.
You got some words of wisdom before we get out of here?
Well, I mean, actually, I just want to thank you. I wanted to tell you all, you can be part of it, that, you know, I really believe in the homeless people together. I was watching what they're doing down in Tucson with all them veterans, collecting them veterans up out of the desert and giving them their own base camp to run. They run their own base camp, finding more veterans, getting them off the streets, put them into housing. So that's their job, is to find the next veterans or any homeless person that wants to come off the streets or out of the desert and get them out of there.
Well, that's an awesome idea.
It's a beautiful concept. And then they run their own camp, and then donations come in for them. They assess the donations, spread them out, and do what they need to do. Yeah. And then now that they've got that child trafficking camp down there, they're all searching the desert for children, and more people trafficking children across the desert. I was like, that's a good idea, too. Give them some work. Put them to work.
Well, there you go. In every single community, there's a job that needs to be done. Otherwise, there wouldn't be no problems. So, Barry, you still there? Were you done, Ted, or did you have more?
Even people that you see on the streets, they're just standing around there, and you think that they're pieces of garbage. They're actually are good sheepdogs that are sitting around and don't know what to do.
Yeah, there's all kinds of good jobs that you could give those people.
I mean, if you could give them what they wanted to do, which was protect people, instead of, you know, kind of being used and abused, and let them protect people here, it'd be a beautiful thing.
Yep.
So they already know what you need. Thanks. It is appreciated.
Well, thank you, brother. Because when you come to the table like this, you are one of the honorable knights of the round table plus a problem solver. That's a twofer, man. So, what about you, Barry? Are you back yet?
Hi, Shazam. Sorry, I had to step away there for a minute.
You got any last words of wisdom before we bail out of here?
Well, what could I say about all the things that's been said here today? Really, it's about people realizing that they have more power than they do, that we actually have a lot of power if we come together. Unfortunately, we have a lot of problems with that, Shaziz, and one of them is, of course, the fact that our society now is so divided.
Yeah.
So until we can reach a common ground amongst all people that everybody can agree on, which is a monumental task, we have an uphill battle here. I understand the solutions. I understand how things can be changed. But unfortunately, our society is still in the matrix. A good percentage of our society is still in the matrix. And I try and reach people every day about exactly what is going on in our society, what's going on with their environment, what's going on inside our government. A lot of people are not receptive to it, but I'm finding more and more people are.
But you know what, Barry?
We're having an impact. We're having an impact.
You're helping to pave the smooth road to that common ground that everybody needs to be. That's what you're doing. You're out there helping pave by showing them and sharing that information with them. See, that's the plus.
It's common sense, man. What we have to do is sit down with our friends and neighbors, have an eye-to-eye, heart-to-heart conversation with them about common sense, things that are going on, common sense solutions to the problems. And people are receptive when you talk on a common sense basis.
Yep. And as far as getting things done, I'll tell you something. There's a boy sitting right here all the way from the Netherlands, right? And he's been a really inspiration to all of us old folks out here because of what he's been able to accomplish in just the time that he's done it. But he's here. He's part of the Dream Team. Somehow or another, everything worked out where we could actually get him here physically. We got four people here, one all the way from the Netherlands, one from Texas, one from
Arkansas.
He tried to say Arkansas. Oklahoma, and one from the land of misery. All right, four brilliant minds in the same room. And what we've said right here on this show today is just a fraction of all the solutions that we've pointed out that are already available. That's brilliant to me. So, with that said, how about you, Jermaine? You got any last words of wisdom you want to throw in there?
I think it's pretty much been said. It's nothing.
Oh. Yeah, he said you was from Arkansas. we love the people in Arkansas too. We're not being funny. It's just one of those things, you know. Anyway, because Thomas lives in Oklahoma, right?
Right.
And I keep telling him he lives in Arkansas. Anyway, sorry.
Not much difference.
No. All right, so, well, Jermaine just made it short and sweet. He said there really ain't much that you can say that ain't already been said in this particular show, but we'll have other ones, I'm sure.
My words have already been said, but I'm going to say them again. Life gives you lemons, make lemonade. Life gives you crap, make fertilizer.
Yeah, there you go. What about you, Thomas?
He's good.
He's got the thumbs up in the air. Thomas is like, Jermaine, we've already said it all. And here's the thing, folks. This may just seem like talk to you, but if you send this podcast out to somebody who needs to hear it, as a matter of fact, take this podcast and play it to your city council. Let them hear what we're talking about. Get a barbecue together, and while you're having this barbecue, play this Knights of the Round Table / Mad Science, and play it to them and let them hear. Alright? And out of those, somebody's going to get bored and walk away. Somebody's going to pick up some information, and somebody's going to take this and say, that's a good idea, and I'm going to pass it on down the road. These podcasts, they serve a purpose. We're immortalizing ourselves in digital cyberspace, so someday if people stumble across this information, it might be an aha moment. I didn't know that they did that back in the late 1800s. They had this equipment. I didn't know that we could use this nasty green duckweed for fertilizer, fish food, biofuel, and so on down the line. There's multiple uses for wood ash and all this kind of stuff. All these are proof of resources that you have available in your community. That every community has tons of fireplaces. You've got abundant resources. Just by burning your firewood, you made more.
You know, Jermaine and I, a lot of people like to look outside the box, but Jermaine and I, we got our own little thing, don't we, son? We stay inside the box, and we search those cobweb cluttered corners for stuff people had and had forgotten about.
Yeah. Well, I'm outside the box looking in, and I'm staying outside the box because I know it's crowded inside the box, and there's a lot of people in there.
There's a lot of corner people aren't looking at. You know?
Yeah, so I'm shouting in, hey, come out here, there's fresh air. Doggone it, it don't smell like feet out here. Anyway, so look, folks, we got the solutions, and we want Knights of the Round Table to pop up everywhere. We want you to take your radio network and make you a Knights of the Round Table. We want round tables all over in every community so that people know that you are not helpless, that you are the problem solver, that if you go look in the mirror, you'll see the miracle you've been looking for. And in the day that you all realize that, and the day that you start gathering together in masses and taking all your talents and gifts that I believe that have been given to you by a higher power, I honestly believe that we got everything necessary to resolve all the issues that are so-called problems in the world. That's what the Knights of the Round Table is all about. Share this message with somebody. If you only like a little piece of this message, take the podcast, cut it out, take in whatever you want and use it, and take whatever you don't want and pass it on down the road. Somebody needs something else in that podcast. But the only way this message that's out there in digital cyberspace ever becomes anything of worth is whenever you pick up these ideas and you run with them and you fix your home. That's it, plain and simple. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. I hope you stay tuned for further episodes.
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're Knights of the Round Table. We dance whenever we're able. We do routines to call the scenes to put work impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're Knights of the Round Table. Our shows are more mid-table. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off the bat in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
We're on second boat. Let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly question.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Sir Fizz the Turbo! Oh, no, it's more King! Sir Fizz the Turbo and the Knights of the Round Table!